intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company Incorporated and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask this that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
This is the Metro Source Long Form Channel.
I'm hearing revolution in the air.
This is the Metro Source. This is the Metro Source Long Form Channel.
Please do not ask for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made.
Liz Brown is out ill today. Instead, we have the best of the wake-up calls. She speaks with journalist Robert Curry on the life and work of the late Jerry Webb. That's up next, right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up, get to me. We have all kinds of stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And don't forget, if you want to toll-free long-distance me, you can do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. And also, you can email me at Liz Brown, LizBrown, at SBCGlobal.net. That's Liz Brown at SBCGlobal.net. We have an amazing story to talk about and a familiar story to talk about here on the Wake Up Call in this hour. We're going to talk about a Pulitzer Prize winning investigative journalist by the name of Gary Webb. It is reported that on December, it has been reported that on December 10th, 2004, Gary Webb committed suicide. He was 49 years old. I talked to Gary Webb and Congresswoman Maxine Waters in 1997. Right when he, right after he had broken the story about the real truth behind the crack cocaine explosion. Dark Alliance is the name of the series of articles, the story behind the crack explosion. And that was reported in the San Jose Mercury News. This was a 20,000-word investigative series that told us how the Nicaraguan drug traffickers based in San Francisco, how they had sold tons of cocaine in Los Angeles, predominantly African neighborhoods, during the 80s, how they were allowed to do so. And how they used the profits from that crack cocaine to fund the CIA-supported Nicaraguan Contras. Now, mind you, Gary Webb never accused the CIA of aiding the drug dealers, but he certainly implied that the agency was aware of the transactions. And the interesting thing about this, about the death of Gary Webb on December 10th, 2004, it is reported that he died from gunshot wounds to the head. Two gunshot wounds to the head. I don't think you have to be a conspiracy nut to ask the question of, excuse me? Two? Huh. Like I said, I talked to Gary Webb in 1997. And here's what he had to say in 1997.
And I got a call from a woman in Oakland who said that she knew of a case that might make an interesting follow-up to my story. And she proceeded to tell me about this group of men who were in jail and had been in jail for like 3 years at that point without ever being brought to trial on cocaine charges. And that all their property had been taken away, all their money had been taken away, and they were all having to rely on court-appointed lawyers who were getting paid by the hour and didn't really seem all that interested, according to her, to have these men brought to trial. Meanwhile, none of them have been convicted. They're just sitting in jail. One of them was her boyfriend, and the rest of them were Nicaraguans. Most of them were Nicaraguans. One of them was her boyfriend. One of the government witnesses was a guy who used to be with the CIA and was, you know, a big cocaine dealer. And at that point, I thought, you know, this woman sounded pretty rational up until now. and I said, I think I may have said something along those lines. And she got very huffy and said, well, you know, if you don't believe me, you can just, you know, get up and come over here and look at the documents because I've got those too. What she had was a grand jury transcript from a federal grand jury in San Francisco in 1994, in which a fellow named Danilo Blandone testified that he had been a major cocaine dealer during the 1980s, and that he had sold cocaine to raise money for this army that the CIA had raised to overthrow the government of Nicaragua. And this was back right after the revolution down there in 1979, and the Sandinistas had taken over and kicked out the Somocistas, and, you know, it was a big, long, ugly civil war, you know, typical complicated Latin American family deal. And we were on the wrong side in that war. We were on the losing side in that war. And right. So the people that got kicked out of that country came to the United States and lived here.
That's what Gary Webb said about how he got started on this story. And what I think is also important that we understand is the connection of the impact of that story and how it talks about how he reported and exposed how the cocaine got to the inner city of Los Angeles. Here's what Gary Webb had to say about that.
Crack was coming up from South America at that time, and it happened to arrive, at least the habit started to arrive in Los Angeles the same time Rick Ross started dealing cocaine. And at the same time, the CIA-linked drug pipeline started bringing it into South Central Los Angeles and by the boatload. They were able to, first of all, they were the first people to rock it up themselves and distribute it as crack. What was happening was they were selling powder, and the users were rocking it up and making crack out of it.
I see.
Okay. Ross's operation started selling pre-made crack.
That's what it was. All right.
And they started selling a lot of it. And the reason they were selling it so much was because the cocaine they were getting was so cheap. It was this stuff that these Nicaraguans were bringing into the country. And it was like half the price of anything else. The reason they were getting it so cheaply, according to this case that I saw in Managua, was that during the Contra War, they were using the Salvadoran Air Force to resupply the Contras because we allegedly weren't allowed to do it because of the Boland Amendment and all that. In what history. But the Salvadorans were flying these planes, and according to this testimony in Meneses' trial, they were flying the plane to Colombia, loading up on cocaine, and then flying it to a military base in Texas and unloading it. And
unbelievable.
Well, it is. And I want to tell people that, I mean, that's the only source I have on that operation. you know, the landing of the planes in Texas. I know the Salvadoran Air Force was helping the Contras. I know they were flying planes for the Contras. And I know, you know, the DEA agent who was watching the airport in El Salvador has written reports that said they were flying cocaine out of these two hangars down there. But we never found out where it was coming from, if it was coming into Texas, because when we went to interview the guy, he disappeared. He just vanished out of this jail he was in.
He vanished out of a jail.
Yeah.
And there was no report of anybody escaping.
They didn't report it until our Managua correspondent got there and found out that the guy was gone, and then suddenly they called the police.
Oh, doggone, we're missing somebody.
Like 3 or 4 days at that point.
Welcome back, folks. That was the voice of reporter Gary Webb, who died on December 10th, 2004. We have much to discuss about his contribution, Gary Webb's contributions to this country, contributions to the world of journalism, and contributions to American history. I have joining me this morning Robert Perry, a journalist, a former Associated Press reporter and journalist, joining us from Washington, D.C., to talk about Gary Webb and his story. Robert, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am outstanding. Robert, you have written many, many stories about the Contra cocaine, L.A.'s coke pipeline, the Contra narco-terrorists. You've written many, many, many articles about this issue. But today I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that you've written, but I also want to talk about Gary Webb. You have written that American history owes Gary Webb a huge debt. Why is that?
Well, in 1996, Gary Webb revived this issue of Contra cocaine trafficking. The history does date back about a decade. When I was with the AP in December of 1985, Brian Barger and I wrote what was the first story about the Contra cocaine problem. We discovered in looking at how the war was being maintained in Nicaragua that some of the Contra units had turned to cocaine trafficking, and we had very solid information on that at the time the AP ran that story in December of 85. John Kerry, who was then a freshman senator from Massachusetts, picked up on that and did a very courageous investigation over the next couple of years, finding more and more connections between these drug dealers in Central America and the Contras, and even showed that some of these, some of the pilots and some of the planes were being used to ferry supplies to the Contras were also implicated in cocaine trafficking. So there was a good deal of evidence, but because of the climate of the times, the major newspapers did not treat it seriously. The New York Times and the Washington Post and other papers generally poo-pooed the story and poo-pooed Perry's investigation, so it kind of died. It was an important, very dark chapter of our history of that period and really fell off the edge of the earth. In part because people were wrapping Ronald Reagan in this sort of warm glow of this iconship that he had developed. So there was no real pressing for the full story. And then Gary Webb, as you pointed out in that clip, stumbles upon the consequences of that cocaine trafficking, at least one of the channels of the cocaine trafficking. Actually, there were a number of Contra cocaine channels coming into the United States during that period, and what Webb did was look at the actual consequences of one of them, which was helping to fuel the crack epidemic in Los Angeles and actually across the country. So what Webb did is he sort of forced the issue back, and this is now in the mid-1990s, and the African-American community picked up on it, understandably, because it had been so badly hurt by the crack epidemic,
and seemingly out of nowhere. How could this have happened? How could crack have invaded the community in such a profound and complete way?
Well, right. So basically, what happened was that because of those two facts, the Webb story, which was the first big internet phenomenon, because the San Jose Mercury News was in Silicon Valley, put up a lot of the documents and support material on the internet. It was sort of an early thing that hadn't happened before in that kind of way. And because the African-American community demanded answers, the CIA and the Justice Department began Inspector General reports investigations and went back through their own files. And what they discovered and what they actually presented to the American people a couple of years after Webb's story was that indeed there had been this serious problem with the Contras and cocaine, that the CIA cited more than 50 Contras and Contra units involved in the cocaine trafficking or implicated in it. And they showed that the Reagan-Bush administration not only was aware of the problem, but in a number of cases interfered with investigations to protect the Contras. That the Reagan-Bush administration had felt that the cause of defeating the Sandinistas in Nicaragua trumped doing serious law enforcement against these Contra cocaine traffickers. It obviously would have been a huge political scandal and embarrassment for that story to be taken seriously in the 1980s when the Reagan-Bush administration was conducting its, quote, war on drugs. I remember Nancy Reagan was leading some of the public relations parts of that.
Just say no.
Vice President George Bush was put in charge of drug interdiction. And, of course, he went on to be president. Now his son is president. So it would have been a huge political embarrassment to acknowledge in real time that had happened. What happened with these investigations, though, was, again, the problem became that the major news organizations, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the LA Times in particular, still refused to treat the CIA's admissions very seriously. The New York Times did put the story on the front page, although rather grudgingly. The Washington Post, after the report came out that made these big admissions, waited several weeks before they did anything and then buried a story. And the LA Times never even bothered to write it. And I think in part that was because the animosity that Webb and the African American community had engendered among those news organizations was so intense that they wouldn't admit that they were wrong and that Gary Webb and the African American community had been right. So, and since there was no real pressure for them to tell the story fully, they continued to knock it down and make fun of it or not deal with it very seriously. So, but the huge debt that the country owes.
I'm going to have to interrupt you just for a second, please, because we have to take a break here. And on the way out, I want to listen to the voice of Maxine Waters as she talks about the impact of this story and what this story meant to the community of African descent. I'm talking to journalist Robert Perry about the death of Gary Webb and the importance of Gary Webb's story, Dark Alliance. We will be back after this. Stay with us.
And I received faxed packages from the San Jose Mercury News of the great revelations by Gary Webb of the direct CIA connection to drugs, that is cocaine and crack cocaine, introduced into South Central Los Angeles and then spread throughout this country.
And when did this begin?
Well, this actually began early 80s. We first heard about this, as a matter of fact, when the Iran-Contra hearings were going on in the Senate, held by Senator Kerry. If you recall, we heard something about drugs in connection with Oliver North.
That was during the 1988 Senate hearings, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
We first heard about it then, but somehow, it did not get the airing, and as I've gone over the information in recent days, it appears that the consultants, the staff from those Senate hearings were simply cut off from information by the CIA. They couldn't get the documents. They were stonewalled. All kind of obstacles were put in their way, and the hearings eventually closed with just enough information having bubbled up that you knew something was there, that there was some connection between Oliver North, the funding of the Contras when they were fighting the Sandinistas, and drugs, that is, the sale of drugs in exchange for, weapons.
Liz Brown is out ill today. Instead, we have the best of the wake-up call, where Liz is speaking with journalist Robert Perry in the life and work of the late Gary Webb. We'll return with more of that following the traffic and this commercial break. In the 7 o'clock hour, Irene J. Smith will be filling in for Liz live in the studio. Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour, 6 o'clock, AM 920 WPNU. I'm Howard Morgan. This hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Friends on TBS. Westbound Manchester after Kings Highway, water mains work. Westbound traffic is being diverted to one of the eastbound lanes, so that's slow traffic there. Eastbound 40 is the last Missouri exit. Broadway exit is road maintenance operation. The ramp is closed. Flood the streets around. Northbound 55 from Butler Hill, Virginia. Everything is on the move. Eastbound 44 from Antire all the way to Merrimack River Bridge. Look for no problems to report. Eastbound 70 from 370 all the way to Blanchett Bridge looks good. Northbound 270 from Graboid to Manchester. Everything is on the move. Westbound 270 from 367 to Graham Hanley looks good. Westbound 255 from Telegraph to 55. No problem to report. Eastbound 70 at 79 out in St. Charles County. Look for a very heavy volume going on there. Westbound 5570 from right before the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect normal traffic. Westbound 64 to 5570 split looks good. And westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank to Laclede's Landing, no problems to report there. Northbound Route 3, those ramps onto the Poplar Street Bridge are good. McLaren at Goodfellow, there's an injury accident. Route K at Route N, there's an accident, and there are road restrictions going on there. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Friends on TBS. Tonight on Friends, it's the one where Ross and Rachel, you know, needless to say, but big Rachel and Ross moment is this evening. Don't miss it tonight on Friends at 7 p.m. Central on TBS. Very funny. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for New Year's Eve. Mostly cloudy today with a high around 40 this evening. Mostly cloudy with a low in the lower 30s. Moving on to Friday, mostly cloudy, a 40% chance of rain. The high will be around 50. Friday evening, mostly cloudy once again till early morning, then becoming partly cloudy, the low in the lower 30s. Then on Saturday, New Year's Eve, partly cloudy skies with a high in the upper 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have cloudy conditions and some light drizzle, if not some snowflakes. 33 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 34 with some clouds and flakes as well. The wind chill out there makes it feel like it's about 27, so bundle up if you're going out anywhere early this morning. Liz Brown is out ill. Instead, we have the best of the wake-up call. It's journalist Robert Perry and his work on the life and work of the late Gary Webb. Irene J. Smith will be live in the studio beginning at 7 o'clock for Liz. Until then, we'll take you back to the best of the wake-up call. We'll have the news, traffic, and weather at the top of the hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
AM 920 WGNU is the home of Radio Free St. Louis. If you're outside the metropolitan area, pick us up at WGNU.net.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, black-owned and black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union. Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
You can help fight arthritis, the nation's number one cause of disability, and get in the best shape of your life. Sign up today for the Arthritis Foundation's Joints in Motion program and receive 20 weeks of expert training to run or walk a marathon or complete a long-distance hike. Events are held in exciting locations around the world. Joints in Motion covers your flight, accommodations, and entry fee. For details, call 314-991-9333 or visit jointsinmotion.org. News to you from Radio Free St. Louis.
Liz Brown is out ill today. Irene J. Smith will be filling in for beginning at the 7 o'clock hour. Until then, enjoy this best of the wake-up call as Liz speaks with journalist Robert Perry about the life and work of the late Gary Webb right here on AM 920 WGNU.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
Speechless, see, I don't know what to say to you. We've been in this struggle trying to get the Congress of the United States to accept the Sentencing Commission's recommendations on the crack cocaine sales of these young blacks.
The mandatory sentencing.
Mandatory sentencing.
Right.
All over the United States in our communities. They've been targeted by the Justice Department. And these young black males are getting mandatory sentences, 5-10 years, for the selling of small amounts of rock cocaine. And so it's so bad, the disparities are so great, until the sentencing said, you got to do something about it.
There was a report that came out earlier this year recommending that they change the mandatory sentencings on crack cocaine and make them the same as powder cocaine.
That's right, because you can sell 100 times more powdered cocaine and get less time. As a matter of fact, it is not even in the federal court oftentimes because it's not targeted. And you can have, you can be in your state courts and get probation.
Well, even in your city of L.A., didn't they do a study on who were the people that were charged federally and who were the people that were locally?
That's right.
And they
really, disproportionately, it is black.
And they and during the one study that they did, I read that there was never one white person charged federally with crack cocaine possession.
That was in the study.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. Our number here is 454-0400 locally. Our long distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. We're broadcasting live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. You can also contact me via email at Liz Brown, LIZZBROWN, at SBCGlobal.net. We are talking about the death of Gary Webb. Gary Webb, an award-winning journalist who wrote a series of articles that basically forced a long overdue investigation into a very dark chapter of U.S. foreign policy, and that is the Reagan-Bush administration's protection of the cocaine traffickers who operated under the cover of the Nicaraguan Contra Wars during the 1980s. I have joining us this morning journalist Robert Perry to talk to us about Gary Webb, the impact of that, of his stories, the impact of this series on this country. Robert, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Robert, you were talking about how the media, you're starting to get to how the media responded to Gary Webb's story. And part of the response of the media came from how the community of African descent responded to his stories. Which direction did the media take after people like Maxine Waters, who we just heard on the show, and that's from an interview in 1997 on this issue, which direction did the media take in its assessment of Gary Webb's story when it was coupled with the concerns articulated by people like Maxine Waters? Did they support Gary Webb, or did they go in the other direction?
Oh, they went in the other direction. We're now in the mid-1990s when this arose. 1996 was when the web series appeared in the San Jose Mercury News. And that was a time, really, of we were into the O.J. Simpson kind of trial mentality in the press. A lot of Clinton scandals about sex and arcane matters about his finances were attracting a lot of attention. So this was sort of an historical story, and the And it was also one that made the major news organizations look bad, because the New York Times especially, but along with the Washington Post, L.A. Times, and other big papers, had played down the Contra cocaine story in the 80s when it first arose. They had made fun of John Kerry when he investigated. Newsweek, a place where I worked for a few years, termed John Kerry a, quote, Randy conspiracy buff, because he explored the Contra cocaine issue. So there was this tone of sort of ridicule that had pervaded this coverage for some time. And so when Gary Webb brought it back, and in a sense was, because it appeared in the San Jose Mercury News, a regional paper, it appeared on the Internet a good deal because of the sophisticated Internet site the Mercury News had, and because the African-American community was so engaged in it, this represented a kind of threat to the big newspapers, who saw themselves as the gatekeepers for responsible news. And so they turned on Gary Webb, and they launched perhaps one of the most remarkable assaults on an individual journalist ever seen.
How so?
Well, they started, first the Washington Times, which was a right-wing paper that was very supportive of the Reagan-Bush years, and of course was funded by Reverend Sun Myung Moon, started off the attacks and basically bought into the initial CIA denials that this had happened. And then the Washington Post picked up on that with a front-page story, and so did the New York Times and the L.A. Times. They all did major front-page stories, and the Contra cocaine issue was a story that virtually never got on the front pages when it was happening in the 80s. At best, it would be buried deep inside the papers. But now, when it was Gary Webb and the African-American community, the stories weren't on the front page, and they were all wildly negative, hostile stories against what Gary Webb had reported. The African-American community was maligned by these major news organizations, accused of being conspiracy prone, I think was the phrase. There was this mocking tone to all of this that it couldn't possibly be true, even though there'd be grudging, if you read through the stories, there'd be acknowledgments like, well, even some CIA officials back in the 80s acknowledged that there were some problems with Contra cocaine trafficking. You find those things buried deep in the stories, but overall there'd be this dismissive approach to what was reported. And over time, that wore down the San Jose Mercury News editors, who saw their careers in danger. It's of course a Knight Ridder paper, and so there's a lot of corporate interest of
We have to take another break, but when we come back, I want you to make that connection for us, because we're not talking about a column that was written by Gary Webb. We're talking about some 20,000 word report. This was an investigative piece that had some that was based upon a lot of the documents that came out of the CIA. So when we come back, I'd like to talk about the connections of the San Jose Mercury News to Knight Rider and why they felt pressure, and then what did they do to Gary Webb as a result of these New York Times and Washington Times and Washington Post reports. This is Liz Brown. I'm talking to journalist Robert Perry. He is a former Associated Press reporter joining us from Washington, D.C. to talk about the death of journalist Gary Webb. We'll be back after this. Stay with us.
So much confusion going down.
You're listening to the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out ill today. She should be back after the first of the year. Irene J. Smith will be live in the studio beginning at 7 o'clock for Liz. Until then, we'll take you back to the best of the wake-up call as she speaks with journalist Robert Perry about the life and work of the late Gary Webb. That follows this is an installment of the Global News Update and these commercials.
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline, Washington. The issue of domestic spying is more widespread than the Bush administration is disclosing. Administration insiders say not only is the National Security Agency eavesdropping on people, but so is the Pentagon, the FBI, the Homeland Security Department, as well as a number of private contractors the government has hired to do its dirty work. One former NSA member who quit after becoming frustrated says there's a concentrated effort to build dossiers on as many Americans as possible in a look-at-everything project. We had mentioned previously about a program that was called Total Information Awareness that was designed by Admiral John Poindexter years ago that was supposed to have been scrapped. But anonymous sources are now saying it is in fact being used to track financial, travel, and other data on Americans. This info then flows into another computer system which analyzes it for, quote, terrorist behavior patterns. Anyone who travels, has a bank account, uses charge cards, and has some type of credit history is in this system, which examines your spending habits and looks for changes in your routine. And Dateline New York. A new report in Forbes magazine indicates the American government is paying private security contractors anywhere from $500 to $1,500 a day for each experienced military person they recruit to serve in Iraq. That means such private security guards can make up to $250,000 a year. The qualifier is that this only pertains to Americans. And what's now happening is that these private contracting firms are also recruiting personnel from other countries and collecting the same rate of pay from Uncle Sam for them, but then only pays them a fraction of what the Americans get. That means they keep the difference in pure profit. For instance, unemployed soldiers from Peru only get less than $6 an hour to put themselves in danger to protect the economic interests of the U.S. and its coalition partners. Latin American mercenaries are also being recruited from Chile, Colombia, Honduras, El Salvador, and Nicaragua. A newspaper in Peru reported 2 months ago that the Peruvian army was involved in furnishing trained mercenaries to the U.S. and had even gone so far as to enter into an agreement with one highly connected contracting firm called Triple Canopy to set up training courses at an army base in the town of Huachipa. In 2004, the U.S. government spent $30 billion on private security contractors, and that was the third largest expense for Iraq after oil and reconstruction. This is your wake-up call global news update.
Get wowed by woo! Listen to Debbie Donzi at WGNU.net for women empowering women, or wild energetic women, or
you
wild wacky women,
book to complete
or
your collection. Try Bargain Books. They've got 50,000 gift ideas for less than $20. Fiction, nonfiction, reference, plus magazines, videos, and even DVDs. Bargain Books is open 7 days a week, and there's a 20% discount on Sundays. Mention WGNU when you stop in and get a free book. Ask for details. Remember, Bargain Books at A1 Books, 10204 Page in Overland, across the street from McMurray Music.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger with a personal invitation for you to join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on WGNU. It is so great to be back in the St. Louis area, and I'm looking forward to talking with you here at Radio Free St. Louis about your personal, work, and family problems and issues. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA, that's 1-800-DR-LAURA, and let's take on the day. Join me, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, 2 to 4 Monday through Friday afternoons on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920 WGNU.
The Sixth Amendment says,
in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury.
Did you know that even today, 95% of the world's jury trials are held here in America? Juries are one of the ways American society guarantees the rights of citizens on trial. It may not be perfect, but it's the best the world has to offer.
Unless you don't answer your jury summons.
Has the jury reached a verdict? Reached a verdict.
Your right to a jury trial is like so many other American rights. It comes with a responsibility. We all hope we'll never need a jury of our peers, but somebody needs one every single day. We owe it to our fellow Americans to answer that call. The American justice system is the envy of the world, but it only works when we do our part. The American jury is we the people in action.
It's National Juror Appreciation Week, and the American Bar Association Commission on the American Jury reminds you, do your jury duty.
Liz Brown is off today. She's ill. She should be back after the first of the year in 2006. At 7 o'clock, we have Irene J. Smith filling in for her, but right now it's more of the best of the wake-up call as she speaks with journalist Robert Perry about the life and work of the late Gary Webb. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the hour.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. I am talking to journalist Robert Perry, former Associated Press reporter, joining us from Washington, D.C. to talk about the death of journalist Gary Webb. And welcome back, Robert. We were talking about on our way out about how the newspapers turned on Gary Webb. And one of the newspapers was his very own newspaper. Talk to us about what happened with that and why.
Well, there was this huge effort to discredit the story and to really attack Webb personally. And it was done by the major newspapers of the United States. And that led the editors at his own paper to, I think, become very nervous and frightened for their own careers. Made a choice they could either back their reporter and keep this investigation going. There was an effort to, you know, even after the first series ran, there was additional work being done by the paper on digging into the truth here and the full story. And all that was cut short. The editor in charge of the paper in San Jose decided that he would basically back off the story. He reassigned Webb to a demoted position, basically signaling to Webb that he should quit, and which Webb did. And the story was killed. Webb left the San Jose Mercury News in disgrace. He managed to land a job with a state government office for a while. And when he lost that, then his life continued to spiral down. Marriage broke up. He went through the kinds of experiences that people do when they face those kinds of professional reversals. Even though, ironically, as this was happening, the CIA, in its internal investigation by Inspector General Frederick Hitz, and even the Justice Department, which also did an internal review, were coming up with more and more evidence showing that the problem that Webb cited was not just was actually much bigger and much worse than Webb had understood and that we had understood back in the 80s when we look at it for the Associated Press. So that's what, so ironically, as those stories kind of came out in 1998, and often they had a press release that would kind of put the best shine on things. The government agencies were not trying to advertise their guilt, but if anyone read past the press releases, what you saw in all the reports were major admissions that leads on drug trafficking were not followed, cases were cut short, investigators in the field were stopped from doing their work, that the CIA intervened with the Justice Department to try to prevent them from doing investigations when the Contras were implicated. So really the picture was far, far worse than what Gary Webb had reported in the San Jose Mercury News, and it was worse than what John Kerry had found when he did his investigation, worse than we had seen at AP. The CIA knew a lot more. The U.S. government knew a lot more about this problem than any of us knew. And they've been hiding this information aggressively for over a decade. But when it came out, still, by then, Webb had been discredited, and none of the papers wanted to revisit the story.
Was Gary Webb ever vindicated in any way? Did the Mercury News ever vindicate him?
No. Basically, I was working on my website then called consortiumnews.com, which we still maintain. And we were going through, because I'd done this work for AP, and I would go through whenever these reports came out and find what was there. And Gary Webb was doing the same. He did a book later called Dark Alliance after his original series. And so much of this information was put down in various ways, you know, for the record, for historians perhaps. But it was not treated seriously by any of the big news organizations. The New York Times did do a front-page story that kind of grudgingly acknowledged that the CIA was confirming a lot more of this than they had thought was true. But it was very grudging, and even then they went on to attack Gary Webb for supposedly overstating things. So the reality was that he had understated things.
And in terms of how this impacted upon Gary Webb, do you think he regretted doing the story? Did you ever get the sense that he regretted doing the story?
Well, he never told me that. I mean, I would talk to him occasionally during this period and on through the following years. But clearly he was more troubled by it than he let on openly. When his marriage broke up, in part because he was despondent. over the fact that he had counted on his colleagues, his editors, supporting him, and what he instead encountered when doing this very difficult, important story was that much of the major news organization, much of his profession had become corrupted by this willingness to go along with the conventional wisdom and not look at issues in a tough, serious way.
Do you think he was surprised about how big the story really was and about the response from his colleagues?
Yes, I think he was surprised. I think he was surprised that the story took on such a life of its own, and that instead of embracing the story and trying to find out more about what had actually happened, that his colleagues in the major news organizations did the opposite. They tried to essentially say this cannot be looked at, and anyone who dares look at it will be destroyed. So that's what happened. And sadly, the history of that era has been distorted by the failures of the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, and other major news organizations.
Now, we only have about a minute and a half left here, Robert. There are people out there that are questioning whether or not Gary Webb took his own life. Are there any stories or is there any evidence to support this type of questioning?
No, I think what happened is that he killed himself. I was not out there, obviously, so this is all secondhand, but I have communicated with his family. He obviously had grown very despondent after his marriage broke up and he lost his other job. He was financially hard-pressed. He was being forced to move out of his house that he'd moved into. He then took various steps to prepare for his death, and then left letters to his kids, his three children, and his ex-wife, and shot himself with his father's gun. Apparently, he did. The first shot was he apparently flinched and it was not a fatal shot, and then he fired again. Obviously, these things have to be investigated and be treated carefully, because when someone has that kind of importance, one has to be concerned about foul play. But the family is convinced, and so were the other authorities in the area, that he did commit suicide.
Journalist Robert Perry, thank you so much for joining us on the Wake Up Call. And what is your website address again, please?
People can actually read a nice story about summarizing much of this information at consortiumnews.com. That's consortiumnews.com. And if they go onto the homepage, you go to the bottom of that homepage, there's a story from December that we did summarizing the case.
Thank you so much, Robert Perry.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Liz Brown is out ill again today. She will be back after 2006. But in 7 o'clock hour, we are going to have Irene J. Smith filling in for Liz Brown. We'll have the news and the weather and your traffic coming up following the ABC News.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, help me, sister. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, help me, sister. It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you pick a knife and knife back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
Hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can this matter?
believe is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
All men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal dignity.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long...
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Liz White. Round one of storms in the West unleashes flood warnings throughout Northern California.
This is the beginning of this type of stuff with the when the winds and the rains come and trees fall and mudslides and that kind of thing.
Ron Rickabaugh is the fire chief in Felton, California. One person died in a car crash caused by a mudslide. More storms expected in Southern California. Pasadena may get its first rainy rose parade in 50 years. A dry forecast in parts of Oklahoma and Texas sparked concern after brush fires that killed five people and destroyed about 100 homes. ABC's David Muir talked with one homeowner in Cross Plains, Texas.
Melanie Masters points to her front yard where she watched the fire leap across the street. It quickly tore through her home. She and her husband just got married last week.
Our wedding gifts were right in front of the fireplace area.
Hers is one of the 50 homes that were destroyed here. There have been more than 137 fires in Texas this month alone, burning more than 23,000 acres.
Texas Governor Rick Perry tours the area today. Helping themselves to money meant for victims of 9/11, it seems not every business that got special government loans was hurt by the terror attacks. ABC's Aaron Katursky has the story from New York.
A liquor store in Georgia, an orthodontist in Wisconsin, a tanning salon in Nevada. You might not think these places were hurt financially by the September 11th attacks, but they received some of the nearly $4 billion in government loans meant to help adversely affected businesses. A new report has found in many cases, lenders never verified whether the borrowers had actually suffered. One senator calls it troubling.
A fork flew off the handle and hit a girl in the forehead. Police in Indianapolis say her stepbrother was playing with the grilling fork, swinging it around by its string when it came loose. It's not clear how deep it went. The girl, 11 years old, is in critical condition. This is ABC News.
Check this out.
What's this? It's Boniva. Boniva is the only once-monthly prescription treatment for postmenopausal osteoporosis, clinically proven to build and maintain bone density with just one tablet a month.
Once a month?
Oh, wow, that's great.
I didn't know you could take just one tablet a month for anything.
With Boniva, you can.
You should not take Boniva ibandronate sodium if you have low blood calcium, severe kidney disease, or cannot sit or stand for at least 60 minutes. Follow dosing instructions carefully. Stop taking Boniva and tell your doctor if you experience difficult or painful swallowing, chest pain, or severe or continuing heartburn, as these may be signs of serious upper digestive problems. You do the right thing to treat your osteoporosis, including diet, exercise, and taking calcium and vitamin D. Ask your doctor today about once-monthly Boniva. See our ad in Cooking Light. Call 1-888-MY-BONIVA or visit Boniva.com. Once-monthly Boniva. There's only one.
Supersize eating now means supersize seating. ABC's Alex Stone explains.
As drive-through lines at fast food restaurants grow, so too are Americans. And car makers are responding by building bigger seats. Surprising? These folks say no.
I guess a bigger seat makes you feel like you're at home.
They shouldn't get bigger. We should be talking about, you know, a nutritional thing where we should actually be making things a little less bigger and, you know, more comfortable.
And seats aren't the only things growing to match the American appetite. Even the test dummies have been updated with more weight to reflect real passengers. Alex Stone, ABC News.
If cats have nine lives, this one used up at least one. Someone put a calico cat in a cage with a rock and tossed it into a river in Missoula, Montana. Instead of landing in the water, the cage bounced on the ice and lodged there. Passersby spotted it and called for help. A firefighter in on the rescue took the cat home and named it Lucky. I'm Liz White, ABC News.
BLNU News Update for the 7 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, authorities have identified an Oakville man who fell off a bluff to his death on Tuesday. 78-year-old Thomas Roth was doing yard work in his backyard near Cliff Cave Park last night when he fell about 50 feet over the bluff. It took crews nearly 2 hours to recover Roth's body. As 2005 winds down, Missouri legislators are looking forward to the 2006 legislative session. State Senator Harry Kennedy says there are a couple of hot topics that need to be addressed, including the issue of eminent domain.
I have some legislation in the hopper about eminent domain nationally, also health care for small businesses, but also health care just on the broad spectrum, making sure that it's affordable for everyone.
State Representative Patrick Doherty says his legislative priorities for 2006 also include the issues of eminent domain and affordable health care, but he says he also wants to focus on tax increment financing and education funding. Finally this hour, the Lupus Foundation of America is highlighting promising developments from the past year. During 2005, the FDA approved the first lupus treatment drug in more than 30 years. The drug Cellcept is a potential alternative to traditional chemotherapy treatment for lupus-related kidney disease. More information on lupus is available from the Missouri chapter of the Lupus Foundation of America at www.lupusmo.org. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Gold's Gym. Gold's Gym, the leader in fitness for 40 years, is celebrating with free enrollment. But hurry, offer ends December 29th. Call 1-800-99-GOLDS or visit goldsgym.com today. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Warren. Sours Traffic and Weather. Sours Traffic is sponsored by Friends on PBS. Westbound Manchester after Kings Highway, there's walking break. Westbound traffic is being diverted onto the eastbound lane, so expect slow traffic there. Eastbound 70 at Air Flight and Lambert Airport, there's a report in accident. I-55 at 270, look for an overturn of the vehicle. Evidence is on the shoulder. There are no delays. Westbound 44 at Kings Highway, look for an accident. Reported eastbound 40 at the last return exit. Look for the Broadway exit to close. Northbound 55 between 270 and Bates. Everything is on the move. Eastbound 44 from 141 all the way into 270. Looks good. Eastbound 40 between 270 and Laclede Station. Nothing to report there. Eastbound 70 between Mid Rivers Mall and Blanchett Bridge is on the move. Northbound 270 at 55 and 44. It looks good. Westbound 270 at Old Halls Ferry and 170. Expect normal traffic. Westbound 255 from Jefferson Barracks Bridge all the way into Lindbergh looks good. Eastbound 70 at 79. Look for very heavy volume going on out in St. Charles County. Westbound 5570 split before the Poplar Street Bridge looks good. Westbound 64 before the 5570 split, you can expect normal traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Laclede's Landing is on the move. Northbound Route 3 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Those ramps look good. Route K and N, there's a report of an accident. Northbound K and eastbound N, traffic is still blocked. Westbound 94 between Beckham and 4061, look for road maintenance operations. The right turn lane will be closed. And westbound 44 at 55, there's road maintenance operations. One lane closed there. As well as eastbound 40 from 14th to Broadway, look for some construction closures going on there. I believe the right lane. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Friends on TBS. Tonight on Friends, it's the one where Ross and Rachel, well, you know, needless to say, big Rachel and Ross moment. Don't miss tonight's Friends at 7 p.m. Central Time on TBS. Very funny. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for New Year's Eve, Saturday. For today, mostly cloudy with a high around 40. This evening, mostly cloudy with a low in the lower 30s. Moving on to Friday, mostly cloudy again, a 40% chance of rain. The high should be around 50. Friday evening, mostly cloudy until early morning, then becoming partly cloudy with a low in the lower 30s. And on Saturday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the upper 40s. Saturday evening, New Year's Eve, you can expect partly cloudy skies with a low in the lower 30s, so plan your attire accordingly if you're going out to celebrate New Year's. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have cloudy skies, some drizzle, and some snowflakes, and 33 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 34 under clouds with some precipitation there as well. Liz Brown is out ill today. We're expecting Irene J. Smith in the studio momentarily to fill in for Liz, and she will be back in the 2006 episode of The Wake-Up Call. That's a look at this hour's traffic and weather. I'm Howard Morton. We'll take another look at traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour.
Mommy, sing me to sleep.
Sure, sweetie. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. You're a ball of gas that's very far. 32 light years in the sky. 10 parsecs, which is really high. Helium, carbon, and
hydrogen
fuse to make our starry friend. When it enters supernova stage, it explodes with bursts of rays. And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole.
And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole.
Thanks, Mom.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, so it's up to parents to help create a brighter future for them. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Diabetes is a killer. After I was diagnosed, I had no pain. I didn't feel sick, so I didn't listen to my doctor. Then it struck. I had a heart attack, then a stroke, and I was only 49. If only I'd known. If only I'd listened.
The complications of diabetes often go undiagnosed and are far more serious than you might think. Most people with diabetes also have high blood pressure and cholesterol, which can cause severe heart damage. In fact, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die from heart disease or stroke. But you can reduce your risk of heart disease and stroke by lowering your blood sugar, blood pressure, and cholesterol. Learn how. Call 1-800-DIABETES for your free diabetes survival guide. Choose to live.
It's not too late. Don't let diabetes destroy your life.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Living holy in the 90s. On the gospel tip. Yeah, this time I brought my family and some friends. Just to tell you, no matter how hard it gets, no matter how rough, every brother, every sister I fed. Listen, don't give up.
I know the day is dim. Chances may be slim. Hold on to what you believe. Yeah. I know it hurts inside.
Oh, good morning, Howard. Good morning, Liz Brown, Morning Wake Up Call listening audience. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz, who is a bit under the weather, so you have to put up with the nice lady. Our contact numbers are 454-0400, long distance. You can get us at 1-877-920-WGNU. Or, you know, we're in modern technology, digital age and all, so yes, you can log in on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. Have you looked outside this morning? It's a little hazy, a little dreary, a little drippy, but thank God we are here. And man is 2005 trying to get out of here. And have we encountered a lot of big things and a lot of little things in 2005? And so in the first hour, if I can get the listening audience to just call in and tell me, you know, what was the best thing that happened with you in 2005? And what might be considered the worst thing that might have happened to you. But one good thing, and that is that we are all here today. We all have our sense of hearing. You know, that way you can hear us on WGNU. And again, this is the Morning Wake-Up Call to the Liz Brown Show. Liz is out today. She'll be back with you on Tuesday. And this is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz. I'm going to go to the phone lines. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Miss Irene J. Smith. I sincerely hope you had a good Christmas and your family and everybody's doing well.
My family is doing fairly well. I have an aunt that's battling cancer. But
I'm sorry to hear that.
But she's battling, and she has good spirits. And
that's
I
good.
Want to send a shout-out to my Aunt Alberta. But she's fighting a good fight.
Well, that's good. I always like to at least say something like that before I get into my little thing here. The two things that really are disturbing to me. One is this black fellow that got shot 9 times by, looked like 15, a bunch of cops pointing their guns at him. He had a knife in his hand.
Somebody in New Orleans?
Yeah, and the thing that's disturbing to me about that, we can take down a grizzly bear with a tranquilizer dart. We can stop a rhinoceros. There are multiple methods. If a man's got a knife, I know of some guys that are martial artists that could have taken that knife away from that guy with no problem. And my point being is that when it's, and if I'm wrong, may the good Lord forgive me, but it always seems like when it's a black person, even though I didn't really get a chance to look to see how many black police officers was in that particular group of fellows that shot this guy. But to me, as intelligent as we are, we can send people to the moon, we can do heart transplants, we're supposed to believe in God, and we're supposed to be a higher order of intelligence. It just seems to me so sad that we could not have used a different method short of shooting a man 9 times, you know? And to me, that's disturbing. The other thing, on a positive note, is the black football coach whose son committed suicide. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm
okay,
here.
Okay, I'm sorry. The message that he gave was to hug your kids and to tell members of your family that you love them and you hug them so that you never have to say, I wish I coulda, shoulda, woulda, but I didn't while the person was alive. So I think that's a good positive note for everybody to ponder, is to don't wait till it's too late to go visit that grandma or auntie, or don't wait till it's too late to hug your child every day and tell your child you love them. You know, and I think a lot of times we get so caught up in the hustle and bustle of running to the malls and paying credit cards and struggling to make your house note or your rent. You get so caught up in the materialistic things in this world that I think sometimes we need to take a deep breath and realize that you can't take none of that to the grave, and that there are other things that are far more important, even though it's important to, don't get me wrong, pay your gas and electric and have a place to stay. But I think putting things in perspective, the simple thing of giving your child a hug and telling them you love them. But those are the two things I was going to mention. I wanted you to kind of give your opinion on both in reference to the fellow that got shot 9 times. And this is not the first time in New Orleans that one black man that they had beat real bad and they tried to say he was drunk. And a man has never drank a drip in his life. So I don't know. I just wanted to get your opinions on both of those two things, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right,
and it's
dear.
Always a pleasure to have you there.
All right. Be safe.
Yeah, bye.
Well, needless to say, relative to the incident with the man that had the knife in New Orleans that was killed, certainly I think what the motorcycle man said about other methods of taking down people could have been utilized. But basically, I think that there is a section that says with most police forces, it's like shoot to kill. I mean, it's not shoot to disarm. Obviously, a lot of the police officers, they're fairly actually bad shots when you consider the number of shots that were fired at the individual. And I just remember, I liked the statement of one of the locals there. I used the phrase local, someone from New Orleans, actually. And it happened to be a Caucasian female, and she was like, you know, was it really necessary to shoot all that many times? Was it really necessary to shoot him dead? He had a knife that was a safe distance. They said that he lunged at someone. Obviously, he missed. So I think the methods that are used, and I know there's always a lot of emphasis on the fact that it's a white police officer, and that the victim quite often is a black or African-American or so-called minority. But more and more, we can just look through the state of Missouri. Just very recently, we had some young people killed, Caucasians, in a truck that backslide. There were innocent people in the truck. They fired, and I think two of the individuals were killed. I think it's a mentality among police officers. Sometimes a lot of them are very scared, and it's amazing to me because I remember growing up in a time when, say, down near Pruitt-Igoe, Cochran Projects, and some police officers rode some of the toughest areas in this city, and they never fired their guns. I mean, this is a time when, you know, you think of a time when they used to attempt to lure officers sometimes into Pruitt-Igoe, and they would shoot at them, you know. And it's amazing. And a lot of those cops were, some of them were very bigoted cops, but it's just so amazing to me that they didn't shoot their weapon as easily as the officers do now. So that, to me, that indicates a number of things. It's a level of handling yourself, and also I think it's just knowing how to maneuver the streets. And a lot of officers are very, very scared and inexperienced. I just noticed when an officer stops you for a traffic violation, and I certainly have been stopped as well, and they're like really, really nervous. And so I know when I was on the bench, I would have incidents, and now we have a lot of incidents where people are being charged with resisting arrest because they ask the officer, what's your name, what's your badge number? People have learned to do that. And a lot of times it's just a matter of the situation totally getting out of hand on both sides. You got an officer who wants to exert his authority. He wants to make you submit. And then you have other young men who, you're not going to take my manhood from me, so the situation gets out of hand. So we have a very complex situation, but I think a lot has to be done in terms of police and community relationships, and we in the city of St. Louis have a long way to go, and we need to work on that here. Relative to your point about family, I think it's very well taken, and that's something that my daughter and I try to do. We try to always talk with each other every day, even though we both have a kind of different schedules at times, and we have a little erasable board that sits on the kitchen table where we tell each other where we are, and we often put love you, have a beautiful day, even if we don't say it verbally. But when they're gone, it's too late. You know, give me my flowers while I can smell them. I don't want you giving me no big rose spray when you got me up there laying in a casket. Give me my roses today. And I think that's the way most people feel. Love me today. Love me when I can know it. And with that, I'm going to go to Big T. Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
One quick comment on what you were talking about. I think it has more to do with lawfully you can do
with
the police officers.
Okay.
It's in certain situations, if you do certain things, then it's justified that they kill you. They don't have to, but it's justified that they kill you. It's at the officer's discretion. If you do certain things, you know, like if your car rolls toward them, they could move out of the way, but if you let your car roll toward them, then they're justified in killing you.
They're justified in killing you and everybody else in the car as well.
Yeah, well, that's how they've been able to do it, and that's how they justify it. But I wanted to talk with you about the separation of church and state. And the thing that kind of, you know, scares me, you know, there was hosts talking about, you know, having Christmas activities in the public schools.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, me personally, I'm a Christian. I wouldn't have a problem with it. And I don't know of any instance where...
When you say Christmas activities,
you know, like
you're talking
Christmas
about from a religious standpoint?
Like a Christmas play, you know, Christmas play about Jesus or something like
mm-hmm.
that, being born.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have had those.
Right. I don't know of any school that prevents you from doing that,
right.
that I know of. I mean, when I was coming up, you could do it. I haven't known, you know, with my kids in school, I haven't known there to be an instance where you couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the point I was trying to make was that if you show favoritism to one religion, if you say, okay, well, you can have this Christmas program in the school, then what's to say that if a Muslim person wants to have some program in the school, or if, you know, Buddhists want to have some program in school, or say, and there are folks out there that do this, I've seen it, you know, there are satanic worship that also, maybe they might want to have some kind of program. And my point, you know, to the host was that, you know, I wouldn't want my kids to be exposed to, you know, some satanic worship program. So if you're going to be fair about it, if you're going to be even-handed, you don't cater to any one religion. You just keep it all, you know, out of there, because we have churches. You know, if you want to learn about the religion, you have churches. I don't see public school teachers being the best people to teach about God. Plus, they may not, you know, even within Christians, not all of them have the same views.
Right.
So is this public school teacher going to teach the variety of Christian worship that you want your kids to learn? I don't think so.
Right.
So
it's a very complicated thing, but I think the approach that you are recommending may perhaps be the best approach. Then the question becomes, in terms of from an educational standpoint, can Christmas be discussed at all?
Well, I don't think there's a problem with discussing, you know, any religion, you know, but I think you have to be even-handed. Have you ever seen this commercial? It was a commercial.
But no, what I said was, can Christmas be discussed at all?
Yeah.
Christmas and religion, people, I don't think it's synonymous. I don't think they mean the same thing. But anyway,
right.
You were asking me about a commercial.
Yeah, there was a commercial that they had. It was a football commercial some years back they had where there was these football players that were getting ready to start a game.
Mm-hmm.
And before the game, they would have a prayer. So
mm-hmm.
So the coach comes in and say, okay, we have to, you know, include all these different religions, you know, because we have to include everybody before we go out and have the game. So here are all the players doing all these different varieties of prayers, and they're trying to do them all quick, you know, before they start the game. So they got the monk guys going over and humming, and then they got the Jewish guys coming in, and then they got the Christian guys going in. And I think that is, you know, whoever came up with that commercial had a good point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this country, you know, everyone pays their tax dollars for the public realm, so to speak. And I would think that anybody in, you know, spending their taxes would want their representation.
Exactly.
So if they don't necessarily have the same beliefs you do, that doesn't mean that you should be able to force your beliefs on someone else. But then if the roles are reversed, then you say, oh, well, we can't do that.
Exactly.
You know,
it's
like a good word for that is prejudice.
Mm.
That's prejudice behavior.
And the other thing is we do not emphasize a lot of tolerance. And it's like you could be a strong believer in Christianity or Islam. But at the same time, in this country, in America, which was founded on freedoms, and that's another whole discussion. But in this country, you know, we have to be respectful to the point of tolerating another person worshiping the way they please, praying the way that they please, and not forcing. Because one thing about at least the God that I believe I serve is he gave us a gift, and that was the gift of free will. And so he allows, just as he allows us to choose, you know, we choose our various religions. And in this country, no one religion should be sanctioned.
Right. And that was my point. But, you know, the host, Billy, I don't know how you get that one-minded.
Well, sometimes
that narrow-minded, but.
As a friend of mine told me, you know, information shifts the mind. So maybe that host has not received enough information. But thanks for calling in, dear.
Thank you.
At the bottom of the hour. This is the Morning Wake-Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. Liz is out today. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz. We'll be back with you after the break.
On TBS, I-55 on the ramp to westbound 270, an overturned vehicle. Everything is on the shoulder. There are no delays, no injuries. Westbound 44, Twins Highway, there's an injury accident. Two left lanes are blocked. There are no delays at this hour. Eastbound 40, left injury exit. That exit is closed. Left is free. Northbound 55 between Bayless and Arsenal. Look for everything to be on. Eastbound 44, Gold. Lindbergh looks good. Eastbound 40 between Dallas and Lindbergh. Dallas and Big Bend looks good. Problems there. Eastbound 74 370 with Lampett Bridge. Everything's on the move. Northbound 270-44 is lighter than normal. Westbound 270 contained a rock all the way into Washington West 474. No problems there. Eastbound 70-79. However, you have heavy volume going on there. Westbound 5570 split from 64 onto the PSB looks good. Westbound 64 before the 5570 split looks good. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Laclede's Landing is on the move. Northbound Illinois Route 3 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for no problems to report. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Friends on TBS. Tonight on Friends, it's the one where Ross and Rachel, well, you know, needless to say, big Rachel and Ross moment. Don't miss tonight's Friends at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on TBS. Very funny. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for New Year's Eve. Mostly cloudy today with a high around 40. This evening, mostly cloudy with a low in the lower 30s. Friday, mostly cloudy, 40% chance of rain, a high around 50. Friday evening, mostly cloudy, early until early morning, then becoming partly cloudy with a low in the lower 30s. Then on Saturday, New Year's Eve, partly cloudy skies during the day, high in the upper 40s. New Year's Eve, partly cloudy skies with a low in the lower 30s. Currently, at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 33 degrees and drizzle. Lambert Field is reporting 34 and drizzle as well. The wind chill out there makes it feel like it's about 27 degrees. Liz Brown is ill. She will be back in the 2006 year of the wake-up call. Until then, we have Irene J. Smith with more. Coming up next, we'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show. Every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 here on AM 920 WGNU.
If you have a travel question, we'll try to find the answer for you.
Tell a friend and tune us in 2 to 4 Saturday afternoon on AM 920 WGNU.
Ever hear of the ReStore?
Yeah, where is it?
3763 Forest Park Avenue, east of Vandenbenner, west of Spring.
What's in the ReStore?
It's an eclectic mix of new and used building materials.
Like cabinets, stoves, hardware?
Absolutely. Everything from windows and doors to the kitchen sink, and then some.
And your purchases benefit Habitat for Humanity St. Louis, right?
Yes, they do.
I gotta check this out. When's the ReStore open?
Tuesday through Saturday, 9 to 4.
3763 Forest Park Avenue.
The ReStore. Check it out.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, Black-owned and Black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU.
Five score years ago.
A great American
signed and proclaimed the name. The emancipation that brought a beacon light of hope. Many of slaves who had been seared called Negroes. A flame of injustice, and now 100 years have passed. And in our today we must face the true and tragic fact. The Negro is still not free, and though impossible it seems. But I have. Constitution reads and gives the promise that all men be guaranteed pursuit of happiness, right of life and liberty.
All right.
The check of independence, cash and decree. Money to
all
money
right.
Is America's home.
This is the morning wake-up call. The Liz Brown Show. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz, who is out today. Our contact numbers are 454-0400. Long distance, you can reach us at 1-877-920-WGNU or on the World Wide Web, www.wgnu.net. Let's talk to Tim on the payphone.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Tim.
How you doing?
On the payphone.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. On the thing about religion, I think the caller said he hasn't heard about schools trying to block like a Christmas play about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody dares try it anymore. I think that's why he doesn't hear about it. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't even dare try it. You know, I have nephews who go to public schools and they have Christmas, you know, breakdown instead of winter break instead of Christmas break.
Right.
So, I mean, no public school would dare have a play about Christ.
Mm-hmm.
They just wouldn't allow it. That's why the caller's never heard of this, because he said that he hasn't heard of people trying to block religion in public schools.
Hmm.
It's a common occurrence. No public schools even dare try to break Christ into public schools.
Well, I can tell you.
That's why he's kind of confused.
I can tell you this, that I have gone to some public schools that they have had Christmas plays that involve the birth of Christ.
How long ago was that?
Not long ago.
Well, did they have some secular intertwining with it? I know, like, nativity scenes you can have with, like, a free hall.
They had something. Oh, I understand exactly what you're saying. They had both, but they did have something tied to the Christ.
You're going to throw in the secular stuff to balance it, I guess.
Yeah.
What to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I'm the wiretapping real quick. I mean, if I call overseas, I hope they wiretap me, because could you imagine the same people that Brooklyn? They caught the guy who was trying to move the Brooklyn Bridge. I don't know if he would be successful. It would take a lot to do that, but nonetheless. If he would have done that, can you imagine all the same people would have said, well, some of the callers at this station would have said, Bush did it.
Mm.
Like, some of the people call and say, Bush was involved in 9/11. I love those calls. I mean, I don't know how they got all of
Well, we may see some complicity on the part of our government in 9/11 before all is said and done.
But anyway, thanks for letting me talk. The other host doesn't let me talk.
All right. Well, you have a good day. Be safe. All right, this is the Morning Wake-Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz. Our contact numbers are 454-0400, or you can call us if you're listening long distance, and I know many of you are, at 1-877-920-WGNU, or you can listen on the World Wide Web, That is, if your boss doesn't mind, but perhaps many of you are your own bosses, and you can listen to us on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. Well, it's lightening up a little bit out there, but we still have some overcast, and we might get a little more rain, but the weather is really kind of mild. It's a little chilly out this morning, but it's kind of mild compared to what it could be and what it is in other parts of the country. But for the last several years, we've been experiencing some mild weather here in St. Louis. Did you have an opportunity to see on the news the incident where there was an explosion over on Hamilton, like between Delmore and up near Cabiny, where there was an apartment complex, and someone said they smelled the odor of gas, and there was an explosion. And I just think about how a lot of our minds think about conspiracies, go right to a conspiracy. So I was driving over that way yesterday as I was dropping my mom off from the hairdresser, and I went to check on one of my senior clients, and there's a lot of new construction around the apartment buildings, and you just look and you say, what is going on here? It's a large apartment building. There was a smell of gas, and it might just have been an accident, and I'm certainly hopeful that happened. But more and more we see brick structures, and particularly in areas that developers want to get their hands on, going up in flames. We saw it in the McCree area when they were trying to push the people out, on Natural Bridge in the First Ward. We had a lot of brick structures, and we saw the same thing, continuously. And I can remember an irate call from this guy who he said he was a St. Louis police officer, which I doubted, saying that, he wanted that property and we shouldn't be sitting on it and da 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 da. But a lot of brick structures are going up in flames. Just observe. Also observe how quickly LRA tears down brick structures. You can have a frame structure that's leaning that Howard and I chewing popcorn would blow the building over, and it stays, and then we see all these beautiful brick structures being torn down. How does that tie in to what was considered the Team 4 plan for North St. Louis, that it would be totally underdeveloped? How does it tie in to the eminent domain that we're dealing with right now? It's a lot to think about. We face some very big challenges. I was listening to the news clips coming in, and they're talking about the legislative kind of briefings on what we can anticipate in Jefferson City. And we heard that at least two of our state senators, although one of them was referred to as a state rep, I think Kennedy and Patrick Doherty was referred to as a state rep when he's actually a state senator, are going to be putting forth some legislation. It's going to be interesting to see what type of legislation is proposed to put a limit on eminent domain. Because just think about it. You could be living in your nice house that you perhaps just put in $100,000 worth of repairs, and the next thing you know, you're getting a notice from the court that tells you to be in court in less than 3 weeks. You go to court. The judge said, yes, the city made a correct decision. This area is blighted. We're taking your house. They appoint three commissioners, and they put a price on your house. The developer pays that money into the court, and the next thing you know, the house that was your house is not your house anymore. The property that was your property is not your property anymore. Man. And I guess I was listening to a friend of mine who was talking about the group that is fighting eminent domain abuse, and there was a dentist from out in Arnold, and he said, Well, it seems like if they don't listen to reason, then it's Annie, get your gun. And I'm awfully afraid that somebody's going to get hurt if we don't deal with this abuse on eminent domain. But I'm going to go to the east side at this time, and we're going to talk to a lady from the east side. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Miss Irene J. Smith?
I'm fine, dear. How are you?
I'm very fine. I would like to say good morning to Liz, and I wish her a speedy recovery. She is in my thoughts and prayers, as well as my daughter. But to speak about the BRICS, I happen to know quite a few BRIC Masons, and they were saying the reason why is such a grab on the BRIC structures there in St. Louis is the fact that it is a lot of money being offered down south for the BRICS, because all these little prefab homes and things they're putting up now isn't worth what those older BRIC structures are worth now.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's not just downtown. They're all over. They're in Portland. They're on the East Coast.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. But they're ravaging. They tend to ravage. They're going now in the black neighborhoods. And it, left to right, you're seeing buildings being demolished or set for demolition in the future. And then you look at all the beautiful antique stones that are in there, you know.
Stolen.
And work. Yes. And the brass that is also entrenching in some of the bricks and some of the overlays over the doorways and the windows and things of that nature. So
the terracotta. You know, what's interesting is, I guess this was probably back in 1995, 96, when I was on the Board of Aldermen. I had a constituent who had a beautiful big brick structure right across from Laclede School.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I convinced a writer at the Post to do a story on how thieves were literally carrying his building away.
Mm.
They would come, and we traced it down. We found out, the reporter found out where they were taking the brick, the terracotta and all the decorative ornamentation brick. And they know where it's been taken, you know, and there's a market for it. You know, it's been taken somewhere over on Sholto, and it lands somewhere else in the Central West End, you know. And nothing is done about it. And literally, I mean, I have seen individuals in broad daylight take automated brick off of buildings because I've called the police, you know, to stop them, you know. And I can remember, and this is bold, you know, how people always say, oh, you don't go into certain neighborhoods, you know. Whites can't go into certain neighborhoods. I saw in broad daylight.
I know that's right.
In an area that is the Horseshoe, that's a rough area in what was the first ward, so now the 22nd ward, it is coming up at this time. But here these fools are out in broad daylight. Show you how bold they are.
Stealing
the decorative terracotta and a different type of brickwork off this building. And so I called the captain. I said, I'm looking at them right now.
Hmm.
You know? So it's bold, and it is being done. People are they're stealing brick. They're stealing, you know, stained glass windows, you know, just walking away with it. People are placing their orders, and they go out, scout the neighborhood, and it's quite often our neighborhood. They scout it, and they get it, and they're gone about their business. But I appreciate your call.
You are so right. I agree with you 100% because knowing that, you know, I'm the lady from the east side. That's my, you know, my little handle when I come on. But being here in East St. Louis, I mean, this isn't even 5 months ago because it's not a whole lot of brick, you know, structure. St. Louis is considered the brick kingdom. But here in East St. Louis, they tore down a very old, beautiful church. I believe it's like on either 24th or 25th State,
mm-hmm.
right across from the Snooks, right here in the Blockbuster on State Street, which is one of our main streets that
okay.
runs through St. Louis.
Dear, I'm nearing a break time,
okay.
So just wind it up real quick for me.
Okay, I sure will. Anyway, they did some underhand deals. They bought the building from under. They claim they bought the building from under an older gentleman. These men went so far as to physically assault this older gentleman, and they tore his brick frame down. It was a large brick, beautiful older church,
mm-hmm.
and they took it part and sold it to places downtown, to places over there in Missouri,
mm-hmm.
and other places down in Mississippi and so forth. So I just wanted to, you know, ride on what you said. It's 100% sure, positive, that they are doing a lot of robbing, brick robbing, throughout black neighborhoods and other older, you know, neighborhoods as well.
All right, dude. You have a safe New Year's.
You too.
And enjoy yourself, okay?
Thank you.
This is the Morning Wake-Up Call. This is the Liz Brown Show. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz. I'm going to be back with you after the break. Stay tuned.
The Wake-Up Call Global News Update is brought to you this hour by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
This is your Wake-Up Call Global News Update. Dateline Philadelphia. The Army National Guard is going to some extreme measures to attract new recruits. One of the new tactics is a pizza box that has a picture of a young, attractive woman on it. The message on the box says, "Join the Guard and get paid and get college tuition." Those boxes are being placed in strategic locations in college towns across the country. Then there's the offer of a free iTunes download just for taking a look at Guard material on their website and then filling out some personal information. The Army has also enlisted the help of some NASCAR drivers to make a pitch for recruitment, since it found out nearly 70% of Guard members are race car fans. The Guard has a budget of $76 million this year to be used to attract new recruits, and the number of full-time recruiters has also been hiked from 2,700 last year to 5,100 this year. And Dateline Washington, another twist to the domestic spying issue. The president and other top officials engaged the National Security Agency to wiretap the homes, phones, and emails of members of the United Nations Security Council in early 2003. The reason? Bush wanted to find out how they were going to vote on a UN resolution that would open the door for the U.S. to lead the invasion of Iraq. Two former NSA officials say Condoleezza Rice, who was then the National Security Advisor, authorized the plan at the request of the president. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld also had input into the idea. A British paper reported on this development last year, but it went unreported by the mainstream media until just recently, when the New York Times broke the story about domestic spying. The U.S. Foreign Intelligence Services Act allows for spying on U.N. diplomats, but it nevertheless is considered a violation of the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations, which states that official correspondence of that mission shall not be violated. This is your award-winning Wake-Up Call Global News Update, brought to you this hour by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
You want your preschooler to be ready for school. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is ready to help you prepare your preschooler not only for school, but also for life. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is an outreach of Trinity Tabernacle, Assembly of God in Bridgeton. Your child, age 2 to 4, receives a non-denominational Bible curriculum with Bible stories, songs, art and crafts, plus lessons in numbers, science, art, and phonics to help prepare him or her for kindergarten. Your child will also grow personally, socially, educationally, and spiritually every day as a unique individual created by God. Call Christine at 314-291-8839 to learn more about Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center and to register your child. Open Monday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center, 11950 Mark Twain Drive in Bridgeton, 314-291-8839. Serving the community since 1979.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap. Weekday afternoons, immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920 WGNU.
Guy Gulman keeps you company after dark. Online at WGNU.net.
I know someone with lupus.
My girlfriend.
My mommy.
We work together.
My sister.
My neighbor.
I know someone with lupus. She's so tired.
Fatigue, achy joints, and fever.
Severe chest pains, heart problems.
Her kidneys gave up.
He had a seizure.
Pain never stops.
Someone you know.
Someone you know.
Someone you know.
Someone you know has lupus.
But there is hope. For information, contact the Lupus Foundation of America at 888-38-LUPUS or lupus.org.
Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
We have time for criticism, held by mispriorisms. When will there be a time to love?
We make time to debate religion, passing bills and buildings.
All right. Woo. Oh, yes. Stevie Wonder, India Irie. When will we find time to love? We have time for the isms, the schisms, the what religion are you? That ain't the right religion. My religion is right. Your religion is wrong. What about your relationship with God? It's all about the relationship. It's all about the relationship. We're going to talk to Christine. Good morning, Christine.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. I want to wish you a joyous Kwanzaa and a happy new year.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I heard you mention the fact about whoever they are, I'll just call them criminals, stealing decorative ornaments off of the brick buildings and literally carrying the building away part by part.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when, I know you've seen these, they're really antique stars, they're wrought iron stars and other types of ornaments that are on the brick buildings.
Exactly.
And they were being stolen. I know someone must have put an order in to steal them because I witnessed a person didn't even have a ladder, so he could only steal the ones from he could reach from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And they've taken most of them off. I mean, and so you would know that it would have to be somebody had placed an order because you can't get those kind of ornaments anywhere. You'd have to steal them.
Mm.
So they've stolen most of them, and I think.
Do you remember the old Poro Beauty College that was located right there at Union and Lillian?
I think so.
It had a lot of wrought iron ornamentation on it as well. And we had the same thing there. Just people just literally, I mean, just walking away, carrying the building away. Brick thieves, building thieves. The worst kind of thieves because they devastate the community when they do that.
And do you know the columns, those brick columns that are on the front porches of some buildings where the part between the roof and the column, there's a beautiful sculptured.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually white.
Mm-hmm.
They steal those, too.
Yes, yes, they do. Yes, they do. Well, Christine, you have a happy rest of the Kwanzaa season and the holiday season. And be safe, dear.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Too. My. This is the Morning Wake-Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz, who is not in today, but will be back with you on Tuesday. Our contact numbers are 454-0400. Long distance, you can call us at 1-877-920-WGNU. Or, yes, we're in the 21st century. You can log in on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. Stay tuned. We're going to be back after the news.
We have a choice to make. There's always more. When will there be a time to love? We make time for paying taxes, paying bills and buying status.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Liz White. Texas and Oklahoma may long for some of what they've had too much of in the Pacific Northwest. Drenching rain after brush fires singed about 100 homes and killed at least 5 people.
Wildfires blackened 20,000 acres here in Texas and in southern Oklahoma. More than 100 buildings were destroyed, many of them homes.
Here in the small town of Cross Plains, Texas, 2 elderly women died. Authorities say they were trapped in their homes.
ABC's David Muir. Too much rain in Northern California. Storms triggered flood warnings. One person was killed in a car crash caused by a mudslide, and there's another storm lurking in the Pacific, which means it may rain on Pasadena's Rose Parade for the first time in 50 years.
It does not rain in California during the parade. Not allowed. We don't even allow to talk about it.
She's a float wrangler. Storms may hit Southern California over New Year's weekend. You've gifted your family, your friends, maybe your mailman. Before the new year, ABC financial contributor Melody Hobson says don't forget to give to your 401k.
If you're under 50 years old, you can contribute as much as $14,000 this year. If you're over 50, $18,000. I know that's a big number. Maybe you got a bonus. If you can't afford those kind of numbers, even a small amount will reduce your taxable income, save you on income taxes this year, not to mention the fact a small amount will help you be one step closer to a secure retirement.
There's more in the case of a Blue Springs, Missouri couple who argued and somehow a cell phone wound up stuck in her throat.
Marlon Brando Gill surrenders to police. He was wanted for assault, but not just any assault. The victim, an ex-girlfriend, ended up with a cell phone lodged in her throat. She says he pushed it down her throat during an argument. He says she tried to swallow it.
Reporter Bob Benish in Kansas City. And it's been a bloody day in and around Baghdad. Among the latest incidents, insurgents reportedly killed 11 Shiites from the same family in Baghdad by slitting their throats. And there's also word of a U.S. soldier who died in a roadside bombing. This is ABC News.
Hello?
Mama, there's tons of holiday traffic. Can you suggest an alternate route?
Oh, I better ask your father. Now, Howard!
To make your holiday travel go smoothly, you want TomTom, not Mom.
Turn left.
TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Easily move from car to car. Grab it and go. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice guides you on your way.
You have reached your destination.
Now through December 31st, get a $50 rebate. Learn more at TomTom.com. TomTom Go. Find your way the easy way.
If you're an adult age 65 and up, you've probably heard about the new prescription drug benefits available to you with the new Medicare Part D. You've probably also got a lot of questions. Your Save-On and Osco pharmacists have answers. With your questions resolved, you can begin to review and choose the best options for you. Enrollment is from November 15, 2005 through May 15, 2006. Before you choose a Part D program, get information you can count on from your trusted partners in health, Save-On, and Osco pharmacies.
A 50-year-old motorist pulled from his car in Milwaukee and savagely beaten is getting better. His wife calls the attack senseless. He is no longer in critical condition and is now able to talk to police. Some witnesses are still reluctant to talk to police. Milwaukee's mayor says it's not typical of his city. Something you don't hear every day, a telemarketer in upstate New York is being hailed a hero. ABC's Aaron Katursky has the story.
I wanted to let you know that because you make your mortgage payments on time...
Usually telemarketers do nothing but annoy, but one helped save the life of an elderly man when Crystal Roselle with Consumer Direct Marketing of Saratoga Springs, New York, called the number in Illinois. A man answered and asked for help. He had fallen, and his phone couldn't make an outgoing call. Roselle's was the first voice he heard. She called police, and the man made it to the hospital. Her boss says Roselle talks to hundreds of people every day, but she had the compassion to listen. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
I'm Liz White, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU News Update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, two men are behind bars in connection with a burglary and a robbery in Hillsboro. 22-year-old Robert Denny and 28-year-old Joshua Stanford are charged with one count of stealing without consent and two counts each of first-degree robbery, first-degree burglary, and armed criminal action. The charges stem from a burglary last week in the 9500 block of Highway BB and a robbery this week in the 5000 block of Wiley. Admission buttons are still available for the First Night St. Louis New Year's Eve celebration. Kelly Weber, the executive director of the event, says from parades to music to fireworks, First Night is a family-friendly event.
People of all ages will find something to do or to be entertained by. First Night is a visual and performing arts festival, and it's really by and for the community. And one of the things it does not offer is alcohol. It's an alcohol-free event.
The theme of this year's event is Emerald City. Admission to First Night St. Louis is $5. Admission buttons can be purchased in advance at MetroTix or on the day of the event at one of several button booths. For more information, log on to www.grandcenter.org. Finally this hour, the Blues are winners of three of their last four on the road after coming away with a 2-1 victory last night in Chicago. Eric Brewer and Dallas Drake netted first period goals for the Note, and rookie Jason Bekashua made the lead stand up by making 21 saves. Scott Young had a pair of assists for the Blues, who handed the Blackhawks their fifth straight loss. The Blues are now 9-21-4 on the season and head to Dallas for a date with the Stars tonight. The Note suffered a 6-1 loss to Dallas just 3 days ago at the Savas Center. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Friends on TBS. Tonight on Friends, it's the one where Ross and Rachel, you know, needless to say, big Rachel and Ross moment. Don't miss tonight's Friends at 7 p.m. Central on TBS. Very funny. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We'll look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Terry Nursing Shea Butterloaf. Eastbound 40th West, Missouri exit, Broadway exit is closed. And 11th Street, get around. Northbound 50th West, River Fair all the way to Lafayette looks good. Eastbound 44th from 109 all the way to Chrysler Plant. Eastbound 40 from 270 to the police station, and eastbound 70 from Bryan Road to Bryan Center Bridge. Everything's flowing freely. Northbound 270 at Sappington to Authority Ferry. Everything is on the road. Westbound 270 from Wildlife, Washington looks good. Westbound 6570 at the Poplar Bridge. You already have heavy dogs going on there. Westbound Cambridge traffic at Cleese Landing looks good. And eastbound Kingbridge between Illinois Bank and Gravel Pit, there's bridge maintenance operations. The right lane is closed. Westbound Manchester at Kings Highway, there's a water main broke, and westbound traffic is being diverted onto one eastbound lane, so expect delays. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Carrie Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion. Carrie Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion is trusted therapy that deeply conditions and nourishes elbows, knees, and everywhere else skin thirst for moisture, leaving your skin smooth and healthy. Try Carrie today.
Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for New Year's Eve, mostly cloudy today, high around 40. This evening, mostly cloudy with a low in the lower 30s. Friday, mostly cloudy with a 40% chance of rain, the high around 50. Friday evening, mostly cloudy till early morning, then becoming partly cloudy with a low in the lower 30s. Then on Saturday, New Year's Eve, look forward to partly cloudy skies during the day, high in the upper 40s. New Year's Eve, look forward to partly cloudy skies with a low in the lower 30s. So if you're going out on town, dress warmly. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 33 degrees under overcast skies with some drizzle and even some light snowflakes. Lambert Field is reporting 34 and drizzle. Stay tuned for more of the award-winning wake-up call. Liz Brown is out until 2006. However, we have Irene J. Smith filling in for her, and she is up next. I'm Howard Morton. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour.
What a difference a day made. 24 little hours. What the sun and the flowers. Where there used to be rain. My yesterday was blue, dear. Today I'm a part of you, dear. My lonely nights are through, dear. Since you said you were mine.
All right. Oh, what a difference a day makes. 24 little hours. Oh, growing up, did I listen to that? Not by choice. Didn't quite appreciate it at the time. But my aunt, Lorena, of course, we called her baby sister. She played that. She loved that song. And when we would go over to her house, we did too, because we heard it all the time. But talking about what a difference a day make, man, in the life of Reggie Clemens, whoo, Chain of Rocks incident in 1991. Jamala Rogers is here with us this morning, and I didn't know she was coming, but I should have remembered that this is the day that we talk about it, and we're pushing for clemency for Reginald Clemens. And so Jamala's here with us this morning, and we're going to talk about and learn about the clemency process. Good morning, Jamala.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
All right.
All things considered, I'm doing pretty well.
All right. Happy Kwanzaa.
Same to you.
All right. And this isn't something that we have to come together, and this is certainly a collective work and responsibility. Where are we now? Jamala.
Where are we now? We are fighting for the life of Reggie Clemens. His co-defendant, Marlon Gray, was murdered by the state in October. And so we know that he was executed in a cloud of reasonable doubt that the governor refused to look at. And so we need to make the case more stronger, more forceful than we ever had before if we intend to save the life of Reggie Clemens.
And I think we also have someone calling in from New Haven, Connecticut.
Yes, that's Kika.
Kika Matos.
Matos. And
Matos.
She's part of the legal committee with the Reggie Clemens campaign.
Okay.
And today we really wanted to talk about the clemency process. One of the things that both Liz and I talked about last week is that this case is a case study. Mm-hmm. For all of the things that could go wrong in the criminal justice system. And so we hope that it will be instructive for those people who are listening who may not today think they need it. Neither did Vera Thomas and Pastor Thomas. They never thought that they would need this. And then all of a sudden, as you said, what a difference a day makes. Mm-hmm. they had to be plunged into finding out how this wicked system works. And it has had a toll on not just the defendants of the case, but the families of the case.
Oh, very definitely, very definitely. So we're going to be joined with our guest from New Haven, Connecticut. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, I'm going to turn you up a little bit. I couldn't quite hear you. And I'm going to fix Jamala up so she can hear you as well. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. How's everybody?
Oh, pretty good. What's the weather like there?
It's cold and it's raining.
Well, it's cold and it's dreary here. It's just been drizzling earlier this morning. It's kind of clearing out. But we're here with Jamala in the studio, and we're talking about the Reggie Clemens case. And we want to talk about the clemency process. Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you begin?
Okay. The clemency process in Missouri is a pretty straightforward one. Missouri is one of the states that has a division of the Board of Probation and Parole, and they make it what's called a non-binding recommendation of clemency to the governor. So what that means is that the board gets together, they consider an application for clemency, they then make the recommendation to the governor, and it's up to the governor to decide whether or not to grant clemency. Unfortunately, in Missouri, the clemency process seems to exist only in name, and that's one of the biggest hurdles that we have with Reggie's case. And there are a few things that are really problematic with the clemency process itself. First is the fact that there is no hearing when an inmate submits a petition for clemency. So what that means is you don't really have the opportunity to present a case in person with the board. The board meets privately, and their deliberations are secret. Now, that's opposed to a parole hearing where, in Missouri, if you are up for parole, you can actually have a face-to-face encounter with the board. So that's one of the things that's problematic with the clemency process in Missouri. The other problem is that because clemency is so such a political thing, governors are generally reluctant to grant clemency, and what we've seen so far with Governor Blunt is a real reluctance to really closely examine issues related to justice in the cases of all of the five inmates that have been executed this year. I believe in two of the cases this year, Stanley Hall and Donald Jones, the board made recommendations for clemency, and he decided to go against the recommendations, and Missouri went ahead with the execution.
Has Reggie's clemency petition been presented to the Probation and Parole Board yet?
It has not yet been presented, but it will likely be presented next month.
Okay.
And just so people know, the clemency process begins when all of the legal appeals have been exhausted. And I think we got our last denial by the U.S. Supreme Court a couple of weeks ago. And so shortly after then, Attorney General Jay Nixon sent over the warrant for an execution to the Missouri Supreme Court. And so any minute, you know, given the nature of the Missouri Supreme Court, we could get a death sentence. And so we are working very feverishly to try to beat the hourglass, but we also know that there has to be a targeted strategy for Governor Blunt. And so we need to make him feel mm-hmm. the people's pain and suffering and concern about this case. And one way that we're doing that is through a petition. And it's a clemency petition that's fairly straightforward because it doesn't have to be a legal thing where, you know, you got to be a registered voter and your name is going to be, you know, put up against the voter rolls. This is a petition that just basically says, We think this case deserves to be looked at in a fair way, and that there's reasonable doubt that surrounds this case, and it needs to be looked at more deeply, and that's basically what it says. And so we're asking people to get as many signatures as we can, and in fact, you know, at the kickoff, we told people there's no deadline date on the petition because we need to be getting them in as soon as we can, as soon as we get one filled up. And we've been getting calls back to say, you said you needed them, and I got mine filled out. So we're playing catch-up in terms of getting those.
If someone wants to pick up the petition, where should they come? Or
right
should
now,
they call?
They can call 367-5959. Or
repeat that again.
That's 367-5959. Or they can come to go to the email and
website.
The website, or at this point, I think we the website in terms of downloading the petition is not quite there because we ran into the holidays. But they can email Reggie's email address, and we can send them something in an attachment, and they can download that.
Okay,
and
yeah,
that's Justice for Reggie, and that's Justice the number four. Reggie, all one word, at yahoo.com. And if you email us, we'll send you back real quick a downloadable version of the petition.
Okay. Relative to preparing for the presentation, really just really sending of the petition for clemency and us signing petitions, what else could we as community do to help in this process?
I think a few things. I definitely think that everybody needs to be calling the governor's office and writing letters to the governor. I also think I would encourage people to contact the members of the Board of Probation and Parole, asking them to seriously consider and to make a strong recommendation for clemency in Reggie Clemens' case. I think I would really like to spend some time talking about the difference between the clemency process and the judicial process, that's the process in court. What makes clemency so important in particularly this case, and what makes clemency different from the court system, is that there are a bunch of rules and regulations that apply when you are appealing your case in court. So, for example, there are rules in the court system that say that if you didn't raise an issue earlier on in your case, you can't ever raise it again. And that happened in Reggie's case, including issues related to actual innocence, issues with the ineffectiveness of his defense lawyers, issues dealing with prosecutorial misconduct. Because his lawyers at a trial did such a terrible job of representing him, a lot of the issues that should have been raised later on were raised, but they were not considered because the court said, too bad you didn't raise these issues earlier.
They weren't.
The rules are such that you can't raise these issues anymore, so we're not going to consider them. So Reggie has gone through, and, you know, I think you will hear, you know, the Attorney General saying, well, he has had these issues examined in numerous courts. That's simply
not
factually incorrect. These
it's
issues
not
have
true.
Never been examined.
Right, because the trial attorney didn't preserve the record for review. You're
exactly.
talking to another lawyer, you can probably tell. And that, I think, needs to really be emphasized. And I'm so glad that you brought that point up, because that's the first thing people say. Well, the courts looked at it and they keep turning it down. I said, well, you need to look at that closer. And I'm so glad you brought that up. And then that takes us to another point. In death penalty cases where issues have not been preserved for review, it seems to me that it's a violation of due process, the very fact that those issues cannot subsequently be brought up. Because we're talking about finality here. We're talking about taking someone's life. We're not talking about someone that got 3 years for stealing and maybe there was an ID that should have been suppressed that wasn't. We're talking about terminating someone's life, murdering someone, in instances that had the record been preserved, there is no question that the court would have granted a reversal.
Yeah. And part of the problem is that what the courts have done, including the Supreme Court, is that they have They have raised the bar in terms of getting inmates an opportunity to have their issues reviewed in court, and they've said, we've changed the rules. We need to expedite executions. You know, these inmates are just sitting around. This is taking too long. You know, they keep talking about finality. We need finality, and finality obviously for inmates means execution. But what they've said, and there's a Supreme Court case called Herrera versus Collins, the court said, well, you know what? We know that there are problems in the criminal justice system, but, you know, there's clemency. And the Herrera case dealt with a death row inmate. And what the court said, yes, these issues couldn't be examined by any of the courts because of a number of reasons, but executive clemency is a fail-safe in the legal system, and executive clemency is what prevents miscarriages of justice. So you have this little game of the court throwing the responsibility on the executive in the governor's office. But the governors are always acting in a very political sense. So a lot of the times, and the governors say, well, you know what, these cases have been reviewed by courts already. There's really nothing new here, and therefore I'm going to go ahead with the execution.
Mm. And to me, that's one of the teachable moments that we want to talk about this morning, because if you have a case, even if it's not a death penalty case, you should know that if your attorney is not objecting things that are violations of the court process, that you won't have much of a remedy afterwards. And
exactly.
So if you know that going into that, you need to be strong with your attorney. You object to everything that's coming down the pike that doesn't look right, and because that's the only thing that's going to preserve that kind of process. So we really want people to zero in on
yes. And again, I think you should just reemphasize again in this situation where we hear the Attorney General saying, well, all these issues have been examined by the court. The fact of the matter is, in Reggie's case, these things have never been examined by the court because they were not, as we say, preserved for review on appeal. So Reggie has never really had a fair trial. He's never had his day in court, you know, because he had inadequate assistance of counsel, just one of many things that happened in this case. And so I think that we really need to make an effort of saying that these things were not looked at by the court. And Governor Blunt, you've got to look at these things, you know, and to do otherwise is certainly a miscarriage of justice, to say the least.
And I might add that they were not looked at in Marlon Gray's case
exactly.
either. And so we've already brought finality to one man's life. Let's not do it in another.
Yes, very definitely.
So, Kika, in terms of the options that the governor has, you want to talk a little bit about that? I mean, it's not a lot, but these people will know, because some people say, well, can he set him free? Can he do this? Can he grant a new trial? What are the powers of the governor in this case?
There are three options that the governor has in the clemency process. One is to grant a reprieve. The other is a commutation. And the third is a pardon. And let me just explain the difference between the three. A reprieve is actually a stay of execution, which is when the governor says, I'm going to stay this execution in order to give the lawyers time to consider, you know, issues A, B, and C. A commutation is a reduction of the sentence, and usually in most death penalty cases it would be a reduction of a sentence from death to life without parole. And then a pardon, which is a third option, is when the governor or a board gives complete absolution of guilt, so they basically completely absolve the person of the crime. And in most cases of a pardon, an inmate can be released, and pardons usually are on the basis of actual innocence, and that's been one of the in terms of actual commutations, pardons are the lesser ones since the reinstatement of the death penalty in 1976. And I will say that clemency is rare in Missouri. There have only been two grants of clemency since the reinstatement of the death penalty in 1976. But throughout the country, there have been 230 clemency grants for a number of reasons, including doubts about a person's guilt. Mm-hmm. You have, in 1987, Maryland case Doris Ann Foster, her sentence was commuted because of doubts about her guilt. You have Henry Lee Lucas in Texas, George Arotano in Virginia, Herbert Bassett in Virginia, Anson Maynard in Missouri. I can go on and on and on. All of these clemency grants were given because of doubts about a person's innocence. And in some actual cases, there were clemency grants simply because of just the inadequacy of the representation of the inmate. And I think with Reggie's case, you have, if you go down the list of the reasons for commutations, you know, there were a number of hits, so to speak, for Reggie, including doubts about his guilt.
I think the last time we had a clemency in the state of Missouri was when the Pope was here.
I was just going to say,
in 1999.
And that's how arbitrary this thing is. And Daryl Meese, who never had claims of innocence. In fact, he felt almost guilty he was getting that kind of attention and from the Pope, because there was other people that he knew on death row that probably deserved it better than he. So it's just, this system is barbaric, is unfair, is unjust, and it needs to be eliminated. And one of the things that happened last week is, you know, our own Congressman Lacey Clay, you know, joined in with a federal anti-death penalty bill. And so, you know, really want to say that all of that is part of a strategy to bring the death penalty down and to abolish it once and for all. And so his colleagues on Capitol Hill have joined together to do that. So
what help are we getting from our local legislators, particularly state legislators, relative to Reggie's case?
The one day that the legal team was in, we had set up a meeting and they all got called to Jeff City for a Medicaid hearing, and so we didn't get a chance to really present the case. But a number of them are already familiar with the case. We've talked to them individually and are on board, and so we need to be very specific about what they can do, because those are the questions they're asking. Okay, what do you really want me to do?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, locally we've had people who want to see what they can do about the case. I got a call from Committeeman Talib El-Amin, who said, mm-hmm. you know, we want you to come to the ward meeting and mm-hmm. talk about it and get the petitions, and,
mm-hmm.
and I can help with the petition. And in fact, I need Brother El-Amin to call me again, because mm-hmm. his number got kicked out of my cell phone. But
mm-hmm.
that's the kind of synergy that we're trying to create.
We really
on all levels, it's going to be a grassroots level, and we really need to have our legislators on board. So
okay, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to hold for a minute with us, sister. We're going to take a break here. This is the Morning Wake Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. We'll be back talking about clemency, and particularly the Reggie Clemens case. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the break.
Stormy, since that moment of bliss, that thrilling kiss, it's heaven when you find romance on your menu.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WCNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at Sour Traffic. The weather, Sour Traffic is sponsored by Friends on TBS. Eastbound 40 is the last Missouri exit. There's road maintenance operation that has the ramp closed. 11th Street is around northbound 55 to Germania 44. Everything's on the move. Eastbound 44 from Williams all the way to the Merrimack River Bridge. Looks good. Eastbound 40 between Clarkson and Redwood looks good. Eastbound 70 all the way into the Blanchard Bridge. Nothing in the port. Northbound 270 from Graboy all the way to Manchester. Everything's on the move. Westbound 270 from Bell Mountain all the way to St. Manley looks good. Westbound 70 from 94, look for bridge maintenance operations, having the left lane closed. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge, heavy volume going on there. Westbound Kingbridge traffic before the police landing looks good. And eastbound Kingbridge between the Illinois Bank and the gravel pit, look for the right lane to be closed due to bridge maintenance operations.
Also westbound Manchester between Kings Highway, look for a water main break, having the westbound traffic being detoured onto one of the eastbound lanes, so expect a slow down there. Westport Plaza at Page, there's a report of an accident, northbound 61 at 40 and 47, there's road construction, and westbound Natural Bridge at Springdale, there's road construction there as well, it has the right lane closed. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Friends on TBS. Tonight on Friends, it's the one where Ross and Rachel, well, you know, needless to say, big Rachel and Ross moment. Don't miss tonight's Friends at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on TBS. Very funny. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for New Year's Eve. Mostly cloudy today, a high around 40 this evening, mostly cloudy with a low in the upper lower 30s. For Friday, mostly cloudy, a 40% chance of rain, a high around 50 Friday evening, mostly cloudy until early morning, then becoming partly cloudy with a low in the lower 30s. Saturday, New Year's Eve, look forward to partly cloudy skies during the day with a high in the upper 30s. And partly cloudy skies at night with a low in the lower 30s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have overcast conditions and 34 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 34 and some clouds as well. Liz Brown is out ill, so we will see her in 2006. Until then, Irene J. Smith is filling in for her, and we'll have her following these messages up next. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I'm Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. And stay tuned for today's solutions with David Lenihan from 4 to 6.
Scientists and doctors are agreeing more and more that diet can determine whether a person lives a long, healthy life or a life full of unnecessary disease and even death.
I have diabetes. And after gradually changing my diet and getting more exercise, I've noticed my sugar level has become stable and my feet don't swell as much.
My blood pressure has been high for 3 years. Once I stopped eating salt and slowed down on eating oily foods, my blood pressure has gotten back to normal.
It seems like I gained weight just by looking at food. But now that I had the knowledge and most importantly the discipline to make conscious healthy choices, my whole life has changed.
Obesity, diabetes, and heart disease cause millions of deaths each year. Every 45 seconds, someone in America suffers from a stroke. Join the battle against these controllable and preventable diseases. Listen to Healthy Alternatives.
Create a healthy future today. I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, Black-owned and Black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920. First Ward Alderwoman Irene J. Smith.
What a difference a day made. 24 little hours.
All right.
What the sun and the flowers.
We're here this morning with Jamala Rogers and Kika Matas, who's part of the legal team, and she's joining us from New Haven, Connecticut. We're talking about clemency, and we're talking specifically about the Reggie Clemens case. And now that this is a young man tied in the Channel Rocks 1991 case, and we've already had one murder of what we believe strongly of an innocent person, and we were trying desperately, feverishly to prevent Reggie Clemens from being murdered. Jamala, as we were on the break, we were talking about the various aspects of this case, and we were talking about, in particular, different things that were just so amazing that transpired. And you indicated something really I've never heard of about the identification of the body, of the one body that was recovered.
The one body that was recovered was recovered near Caruthersville, Missouri. And the testimony and the documents that we received, the family never identified that body. It was identified by the Nels Moss. And so one of the things that, you know, that brings to mind is, you know, if something happened to a member of your family, would you let somebody who doesn't really know markings or know what your child was wearing or know distinctive, you know, features about them, identify that even if the body is not in good shape? And I would say that my mama would not allow that to happen. I don't care what condition my body was
in. And I take it that was not objected to at trial. The identity of the body was not objected to it. Anika, do you know?
But actually, there's very little that was objected to at trial. And if you look at the record on appeal, one of the things that was striking to me was when the appellate lawyers asked, they put the trial lawyers on the stand, and they asked them, and I think one of the things they were getting at was just the sheer ineffectiveness and of the defense counsel. They did a horrible job of representing Reggie. And at some point in time, one of the defense lawyers said, look, I just stopped objecting because I just got tired of being overruled, which is a horrible reason, and it is, to me, a real indication of lack of justice in Reggie's case. To have a defense lawyer say, basically, I just gave up halfway because I got tired of doing my job is unacceptable.
He basically admitted ineffective. I mean, he admitted ineffective assistance of counsel.
Yes.
Because if you don't object, you don't preserve the record, you know. And I know what it's like to object and be constantly overruled. And of course, I was threatened with being placed in contempt of court, you know, in a case that lasted 8 months. You know, I objected and I got called into the judge's chambers for him to make a record. This was a federal case. But here you admit that you didn't object. They should have reversed the case based on ineffective assistance of counsel. There's no justification for that.
No, I don't know how much the attorneys got into this at the last time that they were on the radio, but the other striking thing about this case was just the shenanigans that were going on behind the scenes. I mean, these were lawyers that were retained by Vera Thomas, Reggie's mom, who put all of her money together to try to pay for what she thought would be a good defense in her son's case, and they barely responded to her calls. At the time that they accepted the case, there were two lawyers that worked together. They were a husband and wife team, and they were in the process of getting a divorce. Now, the wife moves to California and accepts a full-time job as a tax attorney, but keeps 10 cases from Missouri, including Reggie's case. Her job was to do all of the pretrial work, to do all of the investigation, to get the witnesses together, to do everything that competent lawyers are supposed to do when they prepare for trial. And her husband's job was supposed to he was supposed to be the actual counsel of record when the trial began. He was the lead lawyer. And she moves to California, then she proceeds to do all of this work from California with these 9 other cases. She came back to Missouri maybe about between half a dozen to a dozen times to work on Reggie's case and the other cases, and at the same time also started a federal trial in Missouri. So that's the kind of preparation that Reggie's lawyers engaged in. And let me just remind everybody that this is a death penalty case. And I have no doubt that this is the reason why Reggie ended up on death row. His defense was basically no defense.
And then the other thing that I would add to that, Kika, is that at a certain point when it appeared or was pretty obvious that there was not going to be the kind of counsel that the Thomases had paid for, they hired their own investigator to start looking for witnesses. This is something that the attorney should have been doing. And so they found witnesses themselves, and in some cases those witnesses never got called to testify.
And actually it gets worse than that. This is a parade of horribles at the sentencing phase, and this is when the defense lawyers are supposed to put up witnesses whose job it is to explain to the jury why the defendant should be sentenced to death. The defense lawyer actually told Vera Thomas, Reggie's mom, to prepare questions for the witnesses for him to ask.
All righty. So you're telling me that the defense attorney didn't know what questions he should ask his witnesses.
That's correct.
At the sentencing phase of the, I mean, surely he, I can understand him talking to her, getting additional information, background information about Reggie, perhaps that Reggie may have not thought about telling the lawyer, but actually writing out the question. You take a death penalty case?
And you ask the defendant's mother to prepare questions for the witnesses.
And this is a mother who has had no interaction with the criminal justice system. So it'd be different if she had some legal background and you could say, can you do that for me? But she's at ground zero with understanding all that's entailed in this, and she's being asked to do the lawyer's job.
Tell me that both of these lawyers have been disbarred.
Actually, one was disbarred. One of the two lawyers was disbarred. And at the end of the case, the lawyers turned around and sued Vera Thomas because they claimed that she owed them money.
So in the midst of the trial, this was going on in the midst of the trial, and she had to hire another attorney to deal with that.
My God.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. Kika, can you tell us some other things about the case? Because for the average Jane on the street, those are things that people can talk about and say, look, this happened in his case. This happened in his case, you know.
In addition to having horrible lawyers represent him, there was strong indications of prosecutorial misconduct in this case. I think this case is an example of, let me just back up by saying a prosecutor's role is to serve justice, not to ensure a conviction. And the prosecutor in this case was so overzealous that at a point in time he actually was admonished by the judge, and he was found to be in contempt of court because he likened Reggie to Charles Manson and John Wayne Gacy. These are both men who were serial killers, when in actual fact, and I will say this again, Reggie, before this case, had no interaction with the criminal justice system whatsoever. I mean, this is a man who had a completely clean record. And the lawyers that are now representing Reggie have consistently raised issues of prosecutorial misconduct. And I would just like to read from an opinion from a federal judge.
Kika, if you could just hold that until we come back from our break. This is the Morning Wake Up Call. We're here with Jamala Rogers. That's our local person. And then we have Kika Matas from New Haven, Connecticut, talking about clemency and specifically the Reggie Clemens tape. Please stay tuned.
My lonely nights are through dear. A day makes. There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy.
Fine. Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork.
These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline Moscow. A report that looked into the circumstances surrounding the bloody shootout at a school in Beslan in September of 2004 has concluded that mistakes by police helped contribute to the excessive loss of life. Alexander Torshin, the head of the Commission of Parliament that led the investigation, said that local police agencies had ignored instructions to improve security around schools in that region, even though it was well known that Chechen rebels were planning attacks. 330 people, half of them schoolchildren, died after Chechen rebels, who were heavily armed, took them hostage in the school and then wound up in a shootout with police and Russian troops. Many of those who survived the massacre place blame on local government agencies for not doing enough to stop the gunmen from even getting to Beslan and then taking aggressive actions to trigger the slaughter. And Dateline Jerusalem. According to the head of Israeli military intelligence, it's very likely that the Palestinian National Authority will divide into two independent factions in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. Major General Aaron Zeevi made his comments to cabinet members last week. His conclusion is that the Islamic Resistance Movement, also called Hamas, will take political and military control over the Gaza Strip, and the Fatah Party will take over the West Bank. He also observed that there seems to be no central government in the Palestinian territories, and people seem to do just whatever they want to in no organized fashion. Parliamentary elections for the Palestinians are set for January 25th, and the Hamas party is claiming a huge victory in the last round of municipal elections that took place 2 weeks ago in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. This is your award-winning wake-up call global news update, brought to you by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
Today's solutions can be found when you join Dave Lenihan online at WGNU.net.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@WGNU.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
Hello, I'm Franklin Graham. Hurricane Katrina was one of the worst natural disasters ever to hit the United States. There are literally tens of thousands of people who have lost their homes. It's going to take months, possibly years, for them to recover. And not only tens of thousands of homes, but an entire city of New Orleans flooded and have to be evacuated. Many of those homes will have to be bulldozed. But Samaritan's Purse is here. We need people's help. We need supplies. We need donations. We need your prayers. And if you would like to help, you can donate by going online to www.samaritanspurse.org or give by phone. And that is 1-800-567-8183. That's 1-800-567-8183. God bless you. And please remember to give and to pray for the folks here in Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
My lonely nights are through, dear. Since you said you were mine.
All right, we're back here with Jamala Rogers, and we're talking with Kika Matas from New Haven, Connecticut, and we're talking about clemency. And as we were going to the break, the sister was about to tell us to read something from a federal appeal case on in Reggie's case, I believe.
Yeah, this is an opinion from the district court judge. She was somebody who granted Reggie relief, and then that was overturned by the higher court, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Who was the judge?
The judge was Judge Perry, Catherine Perry.
Catherine Perry.
Yes, that's her name. She looks at the issue of prosecutorial misconduct And this is one of the issues that she says is procedurally barred. But she says, and I just read this directly from her opinion, there is considerable evidence of prosecutorial over-aggressiveness in this case. The transcript is replete with admonitions from the trial judge to the prosecutor for improper questions, objections, and comments. Ultimately, the trial judge held the prosecutor in contempt of court for violating a court order. The trial transcript and the record as a whole show that the prosecutor was abusive and boorish, and that his tactics overall were calculated to intimidate the defense at every turn. This conduct is certainly unprofessional. Most of the improper conduct, in fact, relates to the claims that I am not even considering on the merits because they were procedurally barred.
But she had to admit.
She had to admit that even despite those things that she could not take into consideration because they were procedurally barred, which means that the trial attorney did not object to them and didn't preserve them for the record. Even despite all of that, there was still overwhelming evidence in the record to establish prosecutorial misconduct. And the Eighth Circuit overturned it?
Yes. She actually gave relief on Reggie's case on issues related to qualifying jurors for this case, but the entire habeas petition went to her, and she considered all of the claims that were written in the petition, and the claims that were many of them, she listed them, and she said these are procedurally barred. So prosecutorial misconduct, even though she says, you know, this prosecutor was abusive and boorish, he was unprofessional. You know, he acted improperly. He was held in contempt of court. I can't look at this issue because it's procedurally barred. Same with the issue of ineffective lawyers. She said the same thing with ineffective assistance of counsel, which is the way that it was phrased in the petition. It wasn't properly raised in state court, though the issues are procedurally barred. The claim of actual innocence, she says this claim also is procedurally barred. Jury selection, there were claims that the jurors were excluded as being not death qualified when, in fact, the lawyer could have rehabilitated and have them serve in a jury. This issue as well, she said, is procedurally barred. So when you go through the district court opinion, first you look at the habeas opinion and you think, wow, this is a real parade of horribles. This is a case of every conceivable wrong that could happen in a death penalty case is in Reggie's case. Every conceivable issue. And then you read the district court opinion, and she says, well, look, you know, yes, there was prosecutorial misconduct, and yes, there may have been ineffective assistance of counsel, and yes, there may be issues of actual innocence, but I can't consider them because they're barred, which is why clemency is so important in this case, because the thing about clemency, and I've said it before, is that there are no rules that the governor has to abide by in terms of really considering the issue. This is a clean slate for him. The lawyers can present every reason why Reggie's deserving of clemency, and he can consider them, and so can the Board of Probations and Paroles. And the only people who can really do that are the Board of Probations and Parole and the governor. Their hands are not tied in any way, shape, or form.
And let me repeat that so that people understand that all of the things that kept us from raising these issues into higher courts now can be raised in the clemency process, and that's why it's important for us to get the governor's attention on this case.
And so the governor could look at these things, even though a appellate court, the Supreme Court, because of procedural rules, could not look at them. All these things, and this we're talking about basic justice. All of these things can be looked at by Governor Blunt. All of the things that went wrong in Reggie's case can be viewed. And if we're talking about someone saying that they believe in justice, then give us justice. You know, look at this case, grant clemency in Reggie Clemens' case. We have about 3 minutes left. Jamala, Kika, are there any specific points that you want to raise in the last minutes that we have?
I do, and that is really the importance of the community speaking out and letting the governor know that it is important that he act in the interest of justice and give clemency in Reggie's case. And let me say that I have worked in on the issue of clemency all across the country, and if it's one thing that has made a huge difference in every one of these cases where clemency has been granted, it's the community speaking out. You know, over and over again, you hear from governors once they leave office and they talk about clemency and death penalty cases, they talk about the importance of hearing from their constituency. So those folks who may think that their voice doesn't matter, I would urge you to speak out, to write, to call the governor, to attend rallies, to tune into Jamala and listen to what's going on, and make your voice be heard, because your voice is what makes all of the difference in saving this young man's life.
That's right. Jamala, can you give out the contact information again for us, please?
Certainly. You can call the Justice for Reggie campaign at 367-5959, and you want to listen for the prompt so that it goes into the correct mailbox. And also you can visit the website at www.justiceforreggie.com, or you can email me at justiceforreggie, that's justice, the number four, Reggie, all one word, at yahoo.com. And the website is going to be given updates in terms of where petitions can be turned in, where they can be gotten, alerts that are coming out. For example, you know, there's some King events that we want to participate in. We want to get the fact sheet out, and we want to get the clemency petitions out. So we need people, we need an army here in St. Louis to do the work of saving Reggie Clemens' life.
Jamala, repeat the contact numbers again. And,
the contact number is 367-5959. And the colors of the campaign is green. That's Reggie's choice. And so we're asking people to wear a green ribbon so that folks know that you are about justice.
All right. This is an opportunity for us, community. We're right here in the throes of Kwanzaa. We've got to do this collectively. It is only with our collective effort will we make sure that Reggie receives justice, even if it's just keeping his life. Kika, thank you so very much for joining us. We appreciate all the work that you're doing. Have a great new year.
Thank you.
Be back with you after the news.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Liz White. Eat less, travel more, and while you're making New Year's resolutions, it's not too late to get in some last-minute tax cuts.
Pay your mortgage one day early, your January mortgage. Pay it by Friday. And specifically, by doing that, you can deduct the mortgage interest this year as opposed to next year.
ABC financial contributor Melody Hobson says do the math.
If you have a $150,000 house and a 6% interest rate, you're paying $750 a month in mortgage interest. Just by paying that mortgage one day early, you'll be able to save $200 on your tax bill this year.
New jobless claims rose by 3,000 last month, but that's still in a range that analysts say is considered mild. A brutal story out of Baghdad today.
It's the most brutal sign of increasing sectarian strife in Iraq. 11 members of the same Shiite family were murdered in their home south of Baghdad today. Police say that 6 gunmen broke into their home in Latafia today and slit each family member's throat. According to police, the family had been warned by insurgents to move out of the Sunni neighborhood that they were living in, but never did. Heather Nauert, ABC News, Baghdad.
Also in Baghdad today, a U.S. soldier was killed in a roadside bombing. 4 policemen were killed in a suicide bombing, and 4 suspected insurgents died in a U.S. bombing on a building north of Baghdad. Too dry in Texas and Oklahoma, too wet farther west. ABC's David Muir is in Cross Plains, Texas. That's an area hit hard by recent brush fires.
Authorities went door to door in this community. They now believe they've accounted for everyone. And they also continue to watch the forecast here. No rain, and authorities here know they are not in the clear yet.
At least 5 people died. About 100 homes have been lost. Storms that prompted flood warnings and evacuations in Northern California are expected to continue into the New Year's weekend in Southern California as well. This is ABC News.
Hello?
Mama, there's tons of holiday traffic. Can you suggest an alternate route?
Oh, I better ask your father. Now, Howard!
To make your holiday travel go smoothly, you want TomTom, not Mom.
Turn left.
TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Easily move from car to car. Grab it and go. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice guides you on your way.
You have reached your destination.
Now through December 31st, get a $50 rebate. Learn more at TomTom.com. TomTom Go. Find your way the easy way.
If you're an adult age 65 and up, you've probably heard about the new prescription drug benefits available to you with the new Medicare Part D. You've probably also got a lot of questions. Your Save-On and Osco pharmacists have answers. With your questions resolved, you can begin to review and choose the best options for you. Enrollment is from November 15, 2005 through May 15, 2006. Before you choose a Part D program, get information you can count on from your trusted partners in health, Save-On, and Osco pharmacies.
She may not like to think of herself as aging like a fine wine, but there is a wine that's been inspired by Madonna. ABC's Dave Alpert has the story from Hollywood.
Madonna has inspired a line of wines. Celebrity Cellars in Napa Valley, California, has created a series of wines inspired by and bearing artwork from Madonna's Confessions on a Dance Floor album. The wine comes in Cabernet Sauvignon, Barbera, and Pinot Grigio. Madonna wine runs from $25 to $40 a bottle. Dave Alford, ABC News, Los Angeles.
At the top of her game and at the top of the charts, Mariah Carey overtook 50 Cent in a year-end battle to claim the hottest-selling album of 2005. The Emancipation of Mimi sold almost 5 million copies. I'm Liz White, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, a Pacific woman is hospitalized after a one-car accident in Franklin County. The Missouri Highway Patrol says the 60-year-old woman traveled off southbound Route 00 shortly after noon yesterday and struck an embankment and a fence post before overturning. The woman was taken to a St. Louis area hospital with serious injuries. A new law going into effect next month will change what people need to do if they sell their vehicle. The new law requires anyone who sells a car, trailer, or ATV to report that sale to the Department of Revenue within 30 days. Mara Browning, a spokesperson for the department, says this will help avoid future problems by making sure the car is titled properly.
Let's say, for example, that the person is part of a criminal investigation who had purchased that car. Well, unfortunately, the title information that the department would have would indicate that the seller was still the owner of the car.
Reporting the sale can be done by filing out a notice of sale form, which can be downloaded online at www.dor.mo.gov. Failure to do so can result in a $200 fine. Finally this hour, the Rams' injury woes continue here in the final week of the 2005 season. The team has placed rookie safety Jerome Carter on injured reserve with a bad ankle, making him the 10th Ram to have his season ended by an injury. The Rams have signed safety Dwayne Carpenter to take Carter's place on the roster. Listed as questionable for the Cowboys game on Sunday are defensive tackle Damian Lewis, wide receiver Dane Looker, and safety O.J. Atagwe. Among the probable players for the Rams are running back Steven Jackson and Marshall Faulk, and quarterback Jamie Martin. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Carry. Carry Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion is trusted therapy that deeply conditions and nourishes elbows, knees, and anywhere else skin thirsts for moisture, leaving your skin feeling healthy and smooth. Try Carry today. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour, 9 o'clock, AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Friends on TBS. Eastbound 40 is the last Missouri exit. Broadway exit is closed for maintenance operations. Ramp is also closed. You can use 11th Street to get around. Northbound 55 at Green Park is 44. Nothing to report. Eastbound 44 from 141 all the way to Lindbergh looks good. Eastbound 40 from Mason to Laclede Station looks good. Eastbound 70 from Midriver Mall all the way to Blanchett Bridge. No problems to report there. Northbound 270 at Gravois and Manchester. Everything is on the move. Westbound 270 from Old Hall Ferry all the way to Lindbergh looks good. Westbound 255 from Telegraph to Lee May Ferry is on move. Westbound 70 at 94, there's road maintenance operations, left lane is closed. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge, that traffic is flowing freely now. Westbound Kingbridge traffic before Laclede's Landing looks good. Eastbound Kingbridge at the Illinois Bank all the way to the gravel pit. Look for bridge maintenance operations. Right lane will be closed. Westbound 64 exit 2B to Martin Luther King Bridge is closed until 2 p.m. for guardrail work. The new ramp at exit 2C is now open. And westbound Manchester at Kings Highway, look for water main work having westbound traffic detour onto one lane of the eastbound traffic. You can expect some slow traffic going on in that area. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Friends on TBS. Tonight on Friends, it's that one where Ross and Rachel, well, you know, needless to say, big Rachel and Ross moment. Don't miss tonight's Friends at 7 p.m. on TBS. Very funny. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday, New Year's Eve. Today, mostly cloudy, a high around 40. This evening, mostly cloudy with a low in the lower 30s. Moving on to Friday, mostly cloudy again, a 40% chance of rain. The high should be around 50. Friday evening, mostly cloudy until early morning, then becoming partly cloudy, a low in the lower 30s. Then moving on to Saturday, New Year's Eve, during the day, partly cloudy skies, high in the upper 40s. In the evening, however, look forward to mostly cloudy skies with a low in the lower 30s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU under overcast skies, we have 33 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 34. Liz Brown is off today. Instead, we have Irene J. Smith filling in for Liz Brown. She's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
5 score years ago,
a great American
signed and proclaimed the emancipation that brought a beacon light of hope. Plenty of slaves who had been seed called Negro. A flame of injustice, and now 100 years have passed. Now today we must face a true and tragic fact. The Negro is still not free, and though impossible it seems, but I have a dream.
All right.
The Constitution reads and gives a promise that all men be guaranteed. Pursuit of happiness, pride of life and liberty. The check of independence, cash and decree. But it is obvious America's a whole.
Oh my. All right. These United States, Constitution of this United States, guarantees us life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It was also supposed to guarantee justice. I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen of the audience, that Reggie Clemens did not receive justice. He did not receive a fair trial. He had inadequate assistance of counsel. And so we as community must come together to get justice for Reggie Clemens. So, if you don't know what to do, you can certainly get signatures on the petitions that go to the governor. And I would urge you to call 367-5959. And as Jamala indicated, listen for the prompt and leave it in the proper voicemail. And if you have a computer, you can visit www.justiceforreggie.com, or you can send to his email address if you need to get petitions. And I'm going to give you out that very shortly as I pull this out. And his email address is justice, J-U-S-T-I-C-E, the number 4, Reggie, R-E-G-G-I-E, at yahoo.com. My, we have a long way to go. Go to the phone lines. Good morning, Louise.
Hello.
Good morning.
Irene, this is a truth in law, but I want to talk to Jemiah Rogers.
She's no longer in the studio.
Pardon?
She's no longer in the studio.
Oh, she isn't. Well, anyway, I had met her, and I'm also the lady with the son who got 24 years. And Judge Catherine Perry, she was the judge. And I feel that my son got injustice also. And his was for some crack cocaine. And that was all.
All righty.
I wanted to say, okay, thank you.
Okay, and have a safe holiday, dear.
Okay, thank you.
All righty.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning, my sister.
Oh, good morning, Brother Fowler. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Hearing you and Jamala and your guests this morning, when I heard you all discussing the issue of the death penalty and the situation with the brother, you know what it really put me in mind of? The original discussion that you were having in relationship to intimate domain from the standpoint of taking your life the way they take your property with no respect,
mm-hmm.
no regard to
exactly.
you as a human being, to the point that it is true that we all need to get in somewhere where we fit in
mm-hmm.
from the standpoint that intimate domain affects everybody. No one is removed from intimate domain, regardless to how poor or wealthy they might be. Cases in point, we already know them. Sunset Hills, now Clayton, in communities where $500 million houses and buildings are just being taken for not the interests of the previous stakeholder, but for the interests of a select body of elected officials and developers. Saying that to also give to the community the information that we who belong to the intimate domain, the local group and also the state group fighting the intimate domain, are planning a trip to Jeff City on the 25th of January to deal with the issue of property rights, because we believe and agree that any time that property is to be taken, it should be negotiated by the developer and the stakeholder. I don't think that no elected official can devise a plan for an individual properties that they can't devise
mm-hmm.
if given the same respect that the developers are given. So I just wanted to call in basically to say good morning.
Okay, good morning. Why don't you give out the information about the St. Louis Coalition and the statewide coalition against eminent domain abuse. Why don't you give your contact numbers?
Well, presently, we meet every Thursday. We haven't met in the last couple of weeks due to the
holidays.
But starting on the 5th, which will be next Thursday of January, we will be meeting at 2953 Dr. Martin Luther King, which is the Jeff Vanderloo Daycare Center.
Mm-hmm.
And we start at 6, and Pam Talley is our coordinator. And when she says 7:30, 29 minutes after 7, she begins to close the meeting down, and we don't discuss anything but intimate domain and the effects on the total community. And anybody that needs to call us can call me at 385-4262 or Pam Talley at 535-6867. Or our state coordinator, who is Jim Roos, can be reached at 771-3509. And
okay.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, Brother made a point, and Liz makes a point often, and that is get in where you fit in. right now, you know, the issue of clemency, and particularly because of the urgency of the situation relative to Reggie Clemens, should certainly be foremost on our minds in this community, because he came from this community. And his mother and his family, and mother and father and family, is a part of this community. So certainly we should have that at the forefront. Again, as Jamala indicated, the Martin Luther King celebration, which will be at Harris Stowe, is an excellent opportunity to leaflet and get out information. I volunteered to come out and pass out information relative to Reggie's case at that setting. Even though you may not want to go in to the celebration, because last year, despite other than Dr. King's daughter, Dr. King speaking, it was very distasteful for me the way it is Dr. King's birthday is being celebrated. But we can also utilize that opportunity to get out information to the community, to the larger community, about Reggie's situation. I want to thank Reverend Fowler for calling in, giving us an update. And again, as he indicated, I think it's January the 25th. I believe he said there's going to be a property rally in Jefferson City. And, you know, even though they're going to be talking about property, your life is property. So that's certainly, again, another opportunity to get out information about saving Reginald Clemens. I'm going to go to the phone lines again at this time. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Yes, Ms. Smith, you know, I was saying, you know, the good thing that we got to make sure that we maintain in this whole thing, too, is we're going to do the petition. We're going to do all that because it was worth a try. Just keep prying it. Because here's my thing. You remember what Kanye West said about George Bush, right?
We understand. Go ahead and make the connection.
Okay. My connection is that I heard the lady before your last guest in the last hour saying that we're going to put all this stuff before Matt Blunt. My thing is, Matt Blunt don't care about black folks. I mean, I feel that we can put all the stuff we can. He'll say, oh, yeah, I'll look at it. But
the thing of the matter, brother, and I know what you're saying.
Right.
I understand your point. But the fact of the matter is we do not want to suppress. We want to make sure.
That's what I said.
That we continue. And that's where the emphasis needs to be. I understand what you're saying about Matt Blunt in terms of equating him with George Bush. We understand the two B-boys. We understand that.
Right, because I feel that when he did the Medicaid cuts, he said, let's see, more black folks. Well, yeah, it'll hurt a few white folks, but I'll get the most black folks. So he knew.
I believe that, and your point may be well taken, but I think it's also occurring. They don't care about poor folks either.
Well,
they don't care about poor folks.
And black folks. So what his target was, Ms. Smith, was to get the majority of black folks all that he can. And so now with the first guy got executed, which he shouldn't have, because now when they find out, I think it's going to come out. It might not be now. It might not be 10 years from now. But it's going to come out that the guy was wrong.
Uh-huh.
That they executed. So when that comes out now, here we go. We're going to get another one. They can't wait to set the date. Oh, let's just do it. That's like back in the olden days when the slaves would be out and they would be picking cotton. And when you hear, you know, Caucasian people say, well, we're going on a picnic, and a lot of people don't know where the word picnic came from. And it's just an old tradition. And you know what? You really can't really blame Caucasian people, because throughout their lives, that's what they were taught. I mean,
yeah.
They were taught to just hate black folks. So
yeah.
What I'm saying is, I mean, so prayer, and I know Reggie's mother real good. I used to live across the street from her. And we used to talk, and I know her
and
she's a Christian lady. But prayer, we're going to do the petition.
No, prayer is at the forefront. I mean, prayer changes things. We have to continue to do that. But God also gave us free will, and he gave us means. So he prayed to him, asked him, have faith that he will deliver. But he also wants us to do what we can do as well. But your point is so well taken. We do need to pray, and that's at the forefront.
That's the main key.
All right, dear.
Okay, God bless you now.
Say, take care.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning, Irene.
Good morning, Miss Mary.
I was always happy and listen closely when I hear Reverend Fowler speak.
Fowler,
I'm sorry. Speak. He always come up with some good points on most issues. I was wondering, and I'd like to know from you, how do they determine what is a historical error than the ones that's not?
They actually are designated as historical areas, and there's a process that they go through. I don't have all of that information with me. As a matter of fact, I was looking at it not long ago, but it's actually a determination made. There's a legislative determination. Then there's a historical designation, a landmark designation, several things. So I can tell you this, that most of the areas, in fact, the majority of the areas in North St. Louis have not been designated as historical areas. Most of the historical designated areas are, in fact, in South St. Louis.
Well, I was at a meeting, you know, the Central West End, the houses are considered as historical areas. I guess you know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at this meeting about a year ago, and I mentioned how we didn't own anything. People could just come along and take it. So one of the politicians there, he said, well, Miss Lewis, while you were, you live in a historic area. You won't have to worry about that.
Yeah. Well, that's something that the elected officials, particularly the local elected officials, when I say local, I'm referring to members of the Board of Aldermen, can certainly look at making their areas historical areas. I can tell you that I know part of the Third Ward, Hyde Park, and is a part of a historical area. But that's something that we certainly need to look at because we have some very beautiful brick structures in our community.
I've got a
full board, so I'm going to move along.
Okay, have a happy new year.
Okay, and you be safe here.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Good morning, Jesse Todd.
Good morning, Irene, Alderman Irene J. Smith. Happy holidays.
Excuse me. I'm just Irene J. Smith. I'm not an alderman. I'm not an alderwoman. I'm just Janie Q. Public.
Okay, thank you, and that's how I will address you.
That's okay. You can just call me Irene.
All right, then, thank you. I didn't want to be taking liberties, but thank you for giving me permission.
Go right ahead.
You've been talking about two interesting subjects today. One was about the Team Full Plan, which covers housing, and then our ward, and I know that happened in a lot of other wards. You know, these schools are closed down.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, my question to you, do you think that's part of the Team Full Plan to close down 14 schools in North St. Louis? And
of course it is. It's part of the Team Full Plan. It's also part of destroying public education.
Right, because I think it's a shame to see kids standing, waiting for a bus to be transported, I believe, to South St. Louis to other black schools and then pass right by our schools. You know, schools that are closed.
Yeah, schools as other institutions in our community, schools are tremendous anchors
exactly.
In our community. And when you see a community where schools are being closed, it's going to have an effect on the community as a whole.
Right. And so with you saying that, I think we have a board of election coming up in April.
That's another whole discussion. I think we ought to be, before we run out and support candidates in the school board election, we need to publicly get them to sign a memorandum of understanding as to positions that they will take on certain things and what they will work for in our best interest. We already know certain individuals, what their positions are relative to public education, such as Dornetta Klinksdale, and no disrespect intended, the gentleman who was just appointed by Mayor Slay, what their position is relative to public education. We need to look very closely at the candidates and not be caught up in, I think he's a good guy. You know, I think Peter is running. He's probably a very good candidate. But I think that we need to know specifically what they stand for. And we have an agenda. The community needs to bring the candidates an agenda that we want to see them work on in terms of our public school system.
And I'm going to take you up on that, Irene. That's going to be one of the things I will personally be doing in the 18th Ward. Putting my personal money and time out here and getting an agenda from the candidates that I make a commitment to.
All right, dear.
I hope I can work with other elected officials.
That's good. Okay. I'm going to move on because we got some more folks on the line. Take care.
Okay.
Good morning, Dolly.
Good morning, Irene Jane Smith. Thought I'd talk to you before the year was out, but I got a problem. I want to know how to cook black-eyed peas and not have a whole lot of flavors.
And not have a what?
A whole lot of flavors. Gas. Old-time gas. Beans will create a lot of gas.
Oh, okay.
But there are some Southern people know how to cook beans of any kind, lima beans.
You want to put a little, you want, I'm not, you know, St. Louis is considered southern. So
right.
You're including St. Louis in that?
I'm putting St. Louis in there. They know how to cook beans.
Why don't you throw you a little pinch of baking soda over in there?
As it's cooking?
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay.
I will have no gas the first of the year.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye. You know what she said, black eyed peas, don't you? You know, it's a tradition in our community and maybe in other communities as well, you know, that people fix a pot of black eyed peas on New Year's Day so that you could have a pea in the pot. And the way gas is, you might not have much else in the pot. But I know I'm going to be having me some black eyed peas and a little, very, very little smoked turkey in it. There. Can be really good. Hopton, John's. Woo! That sounds like it's going to be Hopton, John, black eyed peas. I think we're going to be getting a recipe for that in a minute from someone with some ham hocks. Ham hocks are good, but I stay away from pork these days. Anyway, I'm going to go to the phone lines to try to get in another caller before we go to the break. Good morning.
Good morning, Miss Smith.
How are you?
I'm just fine.
This sounds like Josephine. How are you?
Great. I'm fine.
That is good.
I got a chance. I'm like the last person I spoke with you. Got a chance to talk to you before the year was out.
Oh.
You took my idea. As soon as I heard the young lady speak about the black eyed peas,
uh-huh.
I'm like, God, a teaspoon of baking soda. And then you turned around and I'm like, yeah, well, make sure you don't have no more gas with no oils. Get you some turkey tails.
Uh-huh.
And that's what you make those black eyed peas with.
Yeah.
Because that meat tastes just like salt pork.
All right, now.
Inside that tail.
All right.
You have a blessed day.
Okay. I'm gonna see you real soon. I know I am.
I'm on two issues.
Okay.
School board,
mm-hmm.
and Reggie Clemens. I'm giving my all. I'll see you soon.
All right, dear. Take care of yourself.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're on the line. Talk with us. I guess you went away. How are you?
Yes. Irene?
Yes.
Miss Kat. Listen, the lady that called about the beans.
Uh-huh.
The way you add the baking soda is important, too, because if you add it at the wrong time, you lose the nutrients that are in the beans. What she do is you gotta heat the beans until they're pink, just before they burst open.
Okay.
And then pour baking soda in there, and all the gas will come out green or whatever color. And then she rinsed them off with hot water. And then she could cook them and the gas will all be out, but you won't lose the nutrients that's in it.
Okay.
Also, I thank you for having Jamala on about Reggie.
Mm-hmm.
And because it always affects my heart when I think about him and
Marlon Gray.
Yes. So have a good year. I call to say hi, okay?
All right. Take care, my sister.
Bye-bye.
We're at the bottom of the hour. This is the Morning Wake Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. Liz is out today, and this is Irene J. Smith sitting in for her. Our contact numbers are 454-0400, long distance 1-877-920-WGNU, or you can log in on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the break.
Boys and black girls will join hands. White boys and girls and we'll stand. Sisters and brothers.
I still have a dream.
I have a dream. A dream that one day mountains and hills be made low. The crooked spin may stray to this glorious sea. I
take on the day and take on Dr. Laura Schlesinger on the internet at WGNU.net.
Spring rains, summertime heat. They can take a toll on your roof. But not to worry, call Philip Person Roofing, 361-7127. Person Roofing now offers a GAF factory warranty up to 10 years on any modified rubber roof, and that includes labor and material. GAF is the largest maker of roofing material in the country and stands behind its product 100%. Finance your new roof with Visa or MasterCard. Free estimates. Call Philip Person Roofing, 361-7127.
While that other station is skating on thin ice, we're still talking. Just call 314-454-0400 or from outside the local calling area, 1-877-920-WGNU. Talk to us. After all, the other station will only end up giving you the blues.
Are you looking for a special book to complete your collection? Try Bargain Books. They've got 50,000 gift ideas for less than $20. Fiction, nonfiction, reference, plus magazines, videos, and even DVDs. Bargain Books is open 7 days a week, and there's a 20% discount on Sundays. Mention WGNU when you stop in and get a free book. Ask for details. Remember, Bargain Books at Bargain Books South, 1877 Old Highway 94 South in St. Charles, across from St. Charles 18 Cinema.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU.
Everything will be alright. When you stay, everything will work out fine. Just have faith. When you pray, when you need a friend, when you need a friend, just have faith.
All right, Brother Bob, that's for you, for all of us, too. I'm going to go to the phone lines. We're all lit up here. Good morning, Betty.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm here with the help of the good Lord. I need to ask you a question.
Go right ahead.
Is there any way the people who are against the death penalty could form a coalition and maybe get enough signatures to try to ban the death penalty?
Yeah, well, there,
in Missouri?
There's a coalition that's working on that. As Jamala indicated, there is some federal legislation that I believe she indicated that Congressman Clay from the 1st Congressional District here has signed on as a co-sponsor to. So, yes, they have been working on abolishing the death penalty.
Well, you see, the young kids don't understand. I don't think they understand the law in Missouri. I don't know much about law in other states, but I do know, and this case is so complicated, there's so many questions, you know.
Mm.
And it's so complicated, like many cases, until maybe some people are receive the death penalty, you know, unfairly.
Mm.
So I don't know what they could do, but I do. I try to teach the young children about the law in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
If you are with someone and they commit a crime, if you don't report it, you know, you could get the same sentence.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing of it is, and I guess, you know, whenever I think about death penalty cases, and there have been a number of them I think about, I always think about Eleanor Reasonover. She was,
yeah,
what, one vote away from receiving a death penalty?
Yeah.
And I sat in on Ellen's case.
Uh-huh.
And here we were 17 years later, almost 18 years later. You know, she was vindicated, okay?
Okay.
So sometimes, you know, report, and she reported a crime. She reported a crime. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't report crime. I strongly believe in it. But we also have to teach our children to be vigilant.
Right.
And to be very cautious, because it's like, you know, I'm sure Vera and Miss Vera had no feelings whatsoever. No, it couldn't even enter into her mind that her baby, you know, when she said, "Okay, Rich, I'll see you when you get home. You know your curfew," that he would end up, you know, in the criminal justice system facing the death penalty.
Right.
And so, oh, but a moment, just in the twinkling of an eye, you can end up on a death row. So we do need to teach our children. We need to educate our children. But we also at the same time need to work, as you indicated as you began your comments, we need to work to abolish things that we know are being applied unfairly and unjustly. So I appreciate your call. I'm going to move on to some other callers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, cell phone.
Yes, how you doing, Ms. Smith?
I am blessed.
That's great. I need to ask you a question. I've been researching this, and I haven't been able to get an answer to it anywhere. I've talked to some attorneys. I've talked to librarians. I've called Jefferson City. And the question is, how is the race of a biracial child determined?
I don't know. At one time, it was the mother's race determined the race of the child.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, today, I don't know how it's determined.
Is that
you
right?
Know? And sometimes, quite frankly, I think when the hospitals fill out the information, when they fill out the information, it's mm-hmm. probably, as they say, it's probably willy-nilly. You know,
yeah, that's what I'm trying to get. So there's no federal guideline as far as determining race in the United States.
Right, depending on who fills out the paperwork, you know, or whether the child, you know, like my baby when she was born, they probably would have put white on her the way she looked, you know,
mm-hmm.
if they hadn't looked at me and said, oh. you know,
yeah.
or, you know.
You know, just one of them questions you can't get no answer to.
Yeah.
And I had one attorney tell me, say, well, quite possibly we might be moving to a point to where race doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I wanted to remind him we were talking about the United States.
Yeah, race.
Okay.
Believe me, as Cornell West says, race matters. All right,
you.
Dude. Have a good day.
All right, ma'am. You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill, on the car phone.
Good morning. My comment is I'm a lifelong city resident.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a property owner, single residence, you know, on my own home.
Okay.
And the problem I see with the city of St. Louis is with the refuse and the forestry department.
Okay, what's the problem?
These people are some of the laziest people you ever want to meet. When
you
ask them a question, when I'm on my property and ask someone from the refuse department about a refuse problem, they say it's not my problem, ask the forestry problem, vice versa. When you see the forestry people. And my main...
Let me say this, because I think that many of the people that work for refuge and many of the people that work for forestry are very fine, good workers.
I'm not talking about the employees, Irene.
Well, but that's what you said. You said I'm
talking about the supervisors, the people that have the patronage job. Hold on for a second,
because the supervisors in the refuse department and the forestry department, those are not patronage positions. Those are civil service positions. But at the beginning of your conversation, in total fairness, mm-hmm. you didn't say supervisor. You said
the people who work for.
Okay, you said the people who work.
Right.
Okay, go ahead and make your point.
Okay, my point is that supervisors are derelict in their duties. When you call about something that the city is responsible for, when around your property, they always cry about everything from your property line to the middle of the alley you're responsible for, and then they say that they're responsible for the tree lawn. But my tree lawn looks like a golf course. And I've seen people call about getting trees trimmed in front of their houses. I've seen 5, 10, 12, and 13 trucks, at least 3 or 4 trucks and 2 supervisors.
Right.
In the neighborhood that I live in.
I understand what you're saying about that.
I don't get nothing.
I understand exactly what you're saying because, I basically had to really, you know, get with the director of forestry to get trees. And basically what they said is they don't have the manpower to trim the trees every
mm-hmm.
year, and
mm-hmm.
we're lucky if the trees get trimmed every 7 years on a rotating basis.
I'll be brief with my next comment. I used to live in Chicago for a couple of years. In Chicago at that time, 30 years ago, each ward had 2 at a trash truck and a dump truck. They picked up trash every day. They picked up items that people set out behind their homes every day. And when winter time came, those two trucks had snow plows, and the dump truck had salt on it, and they kept the ward sterling clean. I always thought that was an adaptation that could have been used here in St. Louis because it's so small if it was used.
At one time, we had a much cleaner
true,
city. We could do a whole show on how the city could better serve its citizens.
So I think it's really mundane to talk about what the developers are doing. If you're not looking out for the sanitary safety of the city, there'll be nothing here for the developer stop them from doing eminent domain with.
Okay.
Have a great day.
You too. Thank you for your comments. Good morning.
Yeah, how you doing, Ms. Smith?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, I'm calling from New Orleans, and I'm calling about this latest shooting down here.
We talked about it earlier this morning. Go right ahead.
Right, and it just appalls me that this police chief can get on the television and make a comment that they didn't want to tase the guy because people die from tasers.
They just want to shoot him 9 times. Right.
Right. My problem is this: where's the clergy? You know, it seems to me that whenever injustice like this takes place in our community, I think that, you know, the clergy should be the first on the scene. And I just think that with there being so many churches in our community, I think that that's the answer. I mean, if this kind of stuff is going to stop, the clergy has got to get involved. Because it just seemed to me like, you know, it's like open season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
one of the problems that we're having, at least it has been verbalized here, is that the clergy, a lot of the clergy, is not getting involved for whatever reason. And to that extent, I say we can't wait on the clergy. We really have to mobilize the community and whatever clergy wants to become involved, certainly. But I think your point is very well taken. I know exactly where you're coming from when you say that you believe that the clergy should be the first on the scene, but we just don't have that situation here. And have it in New Orleans as well.
I'm really hoping that in the year 2006, I'm really hoping that the clergy have a better understanding about what takes place in our community. You know, they should be on the forefront.
Yeah.
They should be. I mean, they are leaders in our community, and when a shooting takes place like this, the clergy need to organize. If they organize, the citizens are going to organize.
I just think that citizens should organize themselves, and we should not wait on particular groups of individuals, whether it's clergy or anybody else, to organize, because that's the problem. We're kind of void of leadership a lot in a lot of communities. We're void, certainly, of political leadership very often, and religious leadership, and that's why citizens have to come together and move and be directive themselves. But your point is very well taken, John. Thanks so much for calling us from New Orleans.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Cell phone?
Yes, how you doing?
Good morning, how are you?
Yes, I'm doing fine. Yeah, I was calling about the situation like in New Orleans and situation here with these young men that are on death row and the ones who they just executed.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm thinking if you think about the old days when you go back to when they were, you remember the picture they showed of when they were hanging black men and they were having picnics around them and just eating food and, you know, having a festival. That same mentality, where do you think that mentality went? Not, you know, back then it wasn't illegal. Now it's illegal, so they can't do it in public anymore. But what about the mindset? The mindset is still there. There's still people that still feel that way. They found another way to show their, you know, their race crimes.
And their contempt.
And they're contempt, and that's what's going on today. So,
well, you know, when Jamal and I was talking during the break, and we sometimes forget that in the mindset, and you're making the point as well, that some people consider us as subhuman.
That's right. That's right. I mean, we're subhuman, but when you think about being subhuman, look at all the torture that took place, and while people, I mean, how can you sit there with a person hanging right there in front of you and have dinner? And eat lunch and do it.
Thank you for your comments, brother. We're going to have to go to a break at this time. This is the Morning Wake-Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz. We'll be back with you on Tuesday. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
When you need a friend, just have faith.
This is your wake-up call, global news update. Dateline Baghdad. A group of medical professionals report they have discovered at least 15,000 cases of hepatitis in one of the poorest neighborhoods of Baghdad. Some 1.5 million people live in Greater Baghdad, and the living standards of this particular neighborhood called Al-Sadr Town are described as third world. The medical group that compiled the study did so when it found out the government did not have the means to do it. It is also in sharp contrast with official statistics that only listed 1,500 cases in that town. But those official statistics are only based on hospital records and do not include neighborhood clinics and health center records. Not only is hepatitis on the increase, but so are other major communicable diseases. One of the causes of that is sewer systems are not working right and open sewage runs in the streets. The running water used for drinking has also found to be heavily polluted. All of these factors are compounded by the fact that the Al-Sadr town is the most densely populated area in all of Iraq, where people practically live on top of each other in two-story houses jammed together on narrow streets. And Dateline Washington. Here's another wacky plan by the bureaucrats. The Land Management Bureau wants to apply large amounts of herbicide, mainly by aerial spraying, to public lands in 17 states in the West. The Bureau says this is necessary to reduce the risk of range fires and slow down the spread of invasive weeds. The types of herbicides the agency wants to use include those that attack the development and reproduction of vegetation. Environmentalists are raising concerns over how this will impact wildlife, water, and people who frequent those locations for recreational activities, some of which include national monuments and conservation areas. This is your wake-up call global news update.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, black-owned and black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union. Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Learn to construct brush piles for wildlife cover and their winter survival at the Hengis Outdoor Education Center, 1100 Antire Road in High Ridge on Saturday, January 7th from noon to 4. Please dress for the weather. Sign up by January 3rd by calling 636-441-4554. News to you from Radio Free St. Louis.
Hi, this is Brett Rosen with Head Thumping Talk Radio on WGNU. Just letting you know that we are moving to a new time from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. every Thursday morning, dedicated to making you mad or making you think since 1999. Watching everything the engineer
would move. Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU.
Time to know. We make time.
Crazy Bay Religion. Passing bills and building prisons.
Well, we're going to see what Mac on the cell phone has to say. Good morning, Mac.
Well, good morning, Miss Smith. How are you doing this beautiful day?
I am doing great.
Well, season greetings to you, and Happy New Year is coming up to you and all that.
Happy New Year to you.
I had got in touch with you during the season, so.
Yeah, I think you called me last. I was on my way out the door. I was running fast, moving fast.
Right.
Time to slow down and take in these last few days of the year 2005, which has been a. All right.
So I know you said I was listening, but I didn't get the whole thing. The date that leaflets be passed out for Reggie Williams down at the.
You know what? I don't know that date off the top of my head. At Harris Stowe. I'll find out, Mac, and
let
I'll let you know. I certainly will.
Right, that's what I call you for.
All right.
Okay, then. Thank you.
Oh, you're have welcome, dear. Day. I look forward to seeing you.
Right.
All right. Good morning. Good morning. That person is gone. So. This is the Morning Wake Up Call. This is the Liz Brown Show. This is Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz, who will be back with you on Tuesday. Our contact numbers are 454-0400, long distance 1-877-920-WGNU, or you can log in on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. For those of you who want to help with the clemency for Reginald Clemens, please log in at, you can go to his website at justice4 for Reggie at yahoo.com, or you can call at 367-5959, and that's area code 314-367-5959. And as Jamala indicated, please make sure you listen for the particular prompt so it can go to the right voicemail box. We were speaking earlier today with Jamala Rogers and the sister from Connecticut as they explained the clemency process. And, of course, in the state of Missouri, right now we're dealing with the Justice for Reggie Clemens campaign. We know what transpired in October relative to Marlon Gray. And we are hopeful that we are going to be able to prevent Reggie's execution. And when I say we, that means you, me, I, anyone who has a mindset to become involved. And for those of you who become involved, I would urge you to really get information about this case so that you can intelligently discuss it with other people, because the first thing people say is, well, he had his chance. And, of course, the fact of the matter is his trial attorneys didn't preserve much of anything for appeal, things that could be raised on appeal. We're talking about death here. We're talking about finality here. So I urge you to get involved. I'm going to go to phone lines at this time. Good morning, James. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're on. Talk to us.
Hey, I was listening. You say you're against the death penalty. Am I correct in that?
You're absolutely correct.
All right. Well, what about this guy and this lady that beat this little boy to death?
If
he was found guilty on this.
Okay.
If he's found guilty on this, I mean, don't you believe that little boy deserves some justice?
Let me ask you this. You asked me, you say you're against the death penalty. I don't say it. I am against the death penalty. And I say that as someone who has witnessed individuals in their family being killed, okay?
I'm sorry?
I have witnessed a person in my family being killed, okay?
Okay.
When I was 16, I witnessed my uncle being killed, who was 21, okay, on January the 2nd. I believe I'm opposed to the death penalty, and this country is not fairly applied. In the situation that you just gave about the situation over in Illinois, I don't know what will transpire there if they're found guilty. You know, the circumstances certainly would come out. But even if they were found guilty, I still would be opposed to the death penalty. And the reality of the situation, you're not talking about justice for the person that is killed or died, because If we had a situation, can you turn your radio down, please? We got a terrible feed. If you had a situation where the person who was convicted of killing an individual, and we would kill that individual and that other person would be resurrected, then perhaps I would believe in the death penalty. But the truth of the matter is, it's not about justice for the individual that is killed. It's about a system of justice that we have in this country that says that if you take a life, and if you are convicted of life, of taking a life, then you should be executed. The same system that says that it is illegal, or want to feel that it's illegal to abort a child. And I also happen to be personally against abortion. So I guess, you know, I'm against the taking of life at the beginning, and I'm against the taking of life at the so-called end. But the fact of the matter is, in this country, we should want justice. And justice in this country also means that you receive a fair trial. Reggie Clemens did not receive a fair trial. And anyone, if they had the opportunity to review his trial transcripts, would say, how were they allowed to do that? Why didn't his attorney do that? Why did his attorney not object? And then you had where it was read today, the attorney read from the trial transcript, where the attorney just admitted. The attorney that represented him admitted, I stopped objecting because I got tired of being overruled. Well, guess what? He had a responsibility to represent Reggie. Reggie did not get the representation that he was entitled to. Many of the things that were raised on appeal, procedurally, the court could not consider because the trial attorney did not consider those. So for those of you who are interested in justice for Reginald Clemens, and I understand that there are a lot of bloodsuckers out there, and they want to see people killed no matter what. But for those of you that care about individuals who are being wrongfully executed, become involved in the Justice for Reggie Clemens campaign. Call 367-5959. Get in where you fit in. Work for justice. That is what this country is supposed to be about. And this country is us. So let's work to make a difference. Let's work to make a change. Let's get those petitions signed to urge Governor Blunt to grant clemency for Reginald Clemens. I've enjoyed you this morning. Have a safe holiday. Don't drink too much. And if you drink, please don't drive. This has been the Morning Wake Up Call, the Liz Brown Show. This has been Irene J. Smith sitting in for Liz, who will be back with you on Tuesday. Have a wonderful weekend.
At this moment in time, we have a choice to make.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis, 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Liz White. Dry ground, hot winds make for a killer combination.
It spells disaster when you get a grass fire, especially out here in the rural area where they've got a lot of uncut brush that's very tall, and the fire was... And it just took off.
A firefighter in Cross Plains, Texas. Five people died in Texas and Oklahoma. About 100 buildings.